All right, good evening. Council has just returned from a closed session that we will actually be continuing after this meeting. And so now I will call the regular session of the City Council to order. Let's see, I haven't turned my pages yet. All right, we have a Pledge of Allegiance by Councilmember Newsom.
Please stand and join me for the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk?
Here.
Councilmember Newsom?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Borbo?
Here.
Mayor Moreno?
Here.
Councilmember Fonzie is absent.
And just to let the public know, Councilmember Fonzie is recovering from a knee replacement surgery. She's doing well, but is taking a little bit of time to recoup, and we hope to see her soon. And could I get a motion for approval of the agenda?
I'll so move.
Second.
Approval by Mayor Pro Tem Borbo, second by Councilmember Funk. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Borbo?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Next, we have a presentation, and this is a proclamation recognizing April 2nd, 2019 as Equal Pay Day. And this will be received by Liz Helgerson, president of Atascadero AAUW. And you're welcome to come up, if you like, to the podium. And I'm going to ask Council Member Funk to read the proclamation.
Thank you, Mayor.
You can stay
from here. Yeah.
Okay.
Proclamation, April 2nd, 2019 is Equal Pay Day. Whereas women have made important contributions throughout Atascadero's history by their leadership and the skills they bring to the labor force. And whereas the Atascadero chapter of the American Association of University Women, AAUW, Inc., has advocated for local women and girls and has raised awareness about issues like equal pay for more than 80 years. And whereas AAUW reports that according to the U.S. Census Bureau, American women working full-time year-round in 2018 typically earned only 80% of what men earned. And whereas Tuesday, April 2nd symbolizes the time in 2019 when the wages paid to American women catch up to the wages paid to men during the previous year. Now, therefore, we, the City Council of the City of Atascadero, do hereby proclaim Tuesday, April 2nd, 2019, to be Equal Pay Day and to recognize the contributions women in Atascadero make to our community and to our local economy through their participation in the labor force, as well as the contributions made by Atascadero AAUW to benefit local women and girls.
Thank you, Councilmember Funk. I know that for you, this is something near and dear to your heart. You've been very active with AAUW, and so it's an honor, I know, for you to present, and we're happy to present to you. And Ms. Helgerson, would you like to say something?
Okay, yes. I'm Liz Helgerson, and I'm the current president of AAUW here in Atascadero. I want to, first of all, thank you on behalf of our organization, but also on behalf of all of the women of Atascadero for this important declaration. We are honored to be recognized for our contributions to our community and to the economy here. We are also grateful that you have highlighted the contributions that women make through the labor force here locally. I think you'll notice I'm wearing red tonight, and that is because this color symbolizes how much women remain in the red in our economy. So on April 2nd, if you see lots of women around and they have red on, you'll know that they are speaking out for equal pay. Thank you again.
Thank you. And if you'd like to come up here, we'll come take a picture with you.
Okay, can I?
Yeah, feel free to bring any of your members up. Next on our agenda is approval of the consent calendar, and these are items that are considered to be routine and don't need any particular discussion unless there's a member of the City Council or a member of the public wishing to pull an item. I know that the City Clerk does have a small correction to the minutes.
There was a clerical error on the vote for item C1. It reflects as 4-1, but the vote was 4-0.
Thank you. And is there anyone from council wishing to pull an item? Seeing none, is there anyone from the public wishing to pull an item from the consent calendar? All right. Again, seeing none, I will entertain a motion for the consent calendar.
I'll move approval of the consent calendar.
With the correction?
With the correction as noted by the City Clerk.
I'll second it.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau, second by Councilmember Newsom. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Now we're on to updates from our city manager.
Thank you, Mayor. First of all, I want to know who visited Slow Doco this morning. Slow Donut Company is here and opened here in town.
And you didn't bring
they celebrated their grand opening today at Colony Square near Galaxy Theater. I did stop by and was going to buy donuts for the members of our public, and everybody showed up here at council meeting. But I have to admit, there was a very long line, and they were running low. They've been replenishing all day. But at that particular point, they were a little bit low. So it looked like they had a great turnout. In fact, I heard that there was still a long line out the door, but there were lots of donuts at that time. So that's exciting. We have another opening. There was a soft opening, so a very quiet opening today, of Colony Market and Deli. That opens this Friday to the public. So Colony Market and Deli on the corner of El Camino Real and Traffic Way is now going to be open starting Friday. So we're excited to have them here in Atascadero. And they invite all of you to come on down and enjoy their goods. Last weekend, we had our Friends of Atascadero Library Dancing with Our Stars 10th year anniversary, and it was exciting. We had Atascadero Mayor Heather Moreno dance, Council Member Susan Funk dance, and we also had our Deputy City Manager Terry Banish dance, and they were all absolutely amazing. We were extremely entertained and proud of all of you and the dancers. All of the local stars did a really great job. The dancing was terrific, and the event was very entertaining. I have to say that Councilmember Funk's terrific rendition of 9 to 5 as Dolly Parton was one of my favorites. Although, Heather, you were quite there, too, with your Madonna-esque dancing, and we appreciate it. It was for a great cause. All told, $173,000. Was raised to benefit 7 participating local nonprofits. So each of you represented a different nonprofit, and thank you for doing that.
I'd love to note, too, that Terry Banish won People's Choice on Friday night.
Oh, fantastic. Mm-hmm. I missed that. So, I went
yes.
Thursday night.
Many congratulations to
Terry
her.
Did great. All of you, all the dancers. It was, if you haven't been to Dancing with Our Stars, I highly recommend going. A lot of fun, great fundraiser, great cause, enjoyable evening. So thank you for doing that. We also have the Joy Playground. We'll be holding their grand opening on Friday, April 5th, not this Friday, next Friday, from 4 to 7, and everyone is invited. This is an inclusive playground, and we would love everyone to be there, to be the first to play on the new playground, enjoy our grand opening and ribbon-cutting ceremony. This event will include live music, lots of great food and beverages available for purchase, plus free adult beverages for those over age 21. They will be looking for donations, so please bring your checkbook. But if you don't feel the desire to donate, you're still welcome to come to that. So again, it's Friday, April 5th from 4 to 7, and the playground will be open after that. It's my understanding most of the playground will be complete and ready to play on. I think all that they're expecting to still need to be done is the permanent fencing. They'll have some temporary fencing that day, but everything else should be there. So the playground will be open after that. We have our second annual Central Coast Craft Beer Fest coming up also. It's going to be held this coming Saturday, March 30th, here at the Sunken Gardens. This festival is the culmination of the Central Coast Craft Beer Week, which is being held this week through March 31st. The festival will have samples from over 45 local craft breweries from Monterey through Ventura counties, along with wineries and cideries. There'll be some great live entertainment, plus plenty of food trucks, a great variety of vendors, and lawn games. Admission includes a commemorative glass and unlimited 2-ounce pours. And general admission tickets are still available at centralcoastcraftbeerfest.com. Everybody who went last year really enjoyed the event. I highly encourage people to buy tickets. I don't think you'll regret it. It's a nice event. We also have Tent City Marathon, which will be held on Sunday, April 7th. The full and half marathons begin at 6:30 a.m., and the 10K and 5K races begin at 7:30 a.m. The Race Expo will be located in the Sunken Gardens, will be open at 8 a.m., and we'll have some great local beers, lots of great food, the latest in running fitness resources, and a tent for post-race stretching and massage. The Expo isn't just for racers, but also for all of the spectators who come to root them on, and they're planning for everyone involved to have a great time. The Tent City Marathon features a terrific race course through our beautiful green rolling hills, and it's a fundraiser for the Atascadero Printery Foundation, a great cause. So for more information, visit www.tentcitymarathon.com. And we have more events. Zoo events. So Party for the Planet will be held on Saturday, April 13th from 10 to 3 p.m. The Spring Festival at the Charles Paddock Zoo runs from April 13th through April 28th. And then one of my favorites, 5th Annual Brew at the Zoo will be held at the zoo on Saturday, April 27th from 5:30 to 9 p.m. Go to visit atascadero.com to learn more about these great events. We have a lot of stuff going on here in Atascadero. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you. Any questions?
Rochelle, did you also want to, I think last time you mentioned the citywide yard sale. It's also coming up on April 13th.
Yes, Parents for Joy is holding a citywide yard sale on April 13th. They are still taking signups for households that want to get rid of their excess accumulation of things, and we're certainly encouraging all yarders to come and buy those things on April 13th. It is a fundraiser for the Parents for Joy Playground, and it's a lot of fun. So whether you're a yarder or someone looking to clean your house, it's a great day. Please participate. We appreciate it.
Thank you. And then before we get to community forum, there's someone I would like to introduce, and I know it just to our community and would like to say a few words to us, and that's Joe Gazzardi, who is the new County Office of Emergency Services Manager. Wanted to introduce himself and just let us know a little bit about what the OES is doing.
Well, good evening, Madam Mayor and council members. So I'm your new, the county's new Emergency Services Manager in the Office of Emergency Services. And I've just been here just shy of 3 months. A little background on myself, I worked in Santa Barbara County for 27 years. And then I took a job up in Santa Clara County for the last 3.5 years. So trying to get back home, an opening came up here in San Luis Obispo County. So I was successful in getting appointed to this position. So my job, as you probably know, is PG&E is going to be shutting down the nuclear power plant over the next several years. So one of the things that's on our agenda is to sort of focus, not ignore the plant, but sort of focus on all risk emergency management issues, fires, floods, earthquakes, things like that, that happen quite more often than any issues at the plant. The other thing the county administrator wants to focus on is improving the relationships with the cities and the special districts and the university to have a better, closer relationship. And that's something that I've been doing for the last 30 years. In Santa Barbara, we had 8 different cities that we worked with, along with the university. And up in Santa Clara, I actually had 15 cities that we worked with, much taller order. So pretty much creating a better environment, a more collaborative environment. As I said, focusing more on all risk issues instead of just sort of obsessing on the nuclear power plant. And trying to get folks, one of the efforts that I'm going to be working with your fire chief and some other folks in the town to work on hopefully a training plan so that we can all start working together and understanding how we operate during an emergency. For the folks in the audience that don't really know what OES does, we're kind of a behind-the-scenes organization. We work to connect you, elected officials and appointed officials, with an incident that might happen out in the field. We work closely with your first responders. The main role that we have is to support and collaborate to make sure that we have a successful response to an incident. Years and years ago, it was more of a free-for-all when something bad happened. Everybody was sort of doing their own thing and not really working together in a cohesive effort. So about 25 years ago, new laws were enacted, especially in California, to help us coordinate. And that's what OES does. We're sort of that link between you and your first responders out in the field and the community so that things go a lot more smoothly when we go from chaos back to normalcy. So unless there's any questions, and again, I was just here to say hi and introduce myself. And if you have any needs, your staff knows how to find me.
They do.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Gazzardi. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. We will now open community forum. This is reserved for persons wanting to address the council on something that is not on our agenda tonight, but over which we have jurisdiction. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes, and you'll see a timer up there that will assist you in knowing when your time is up. Please do state your name before making your comments. Know that comments made during community forum will not be a subject of discussion, and a maximum of 30 minutes will be allowed for community forum unless changed by the council. And any members of the public who have questions or need information can contact the city clerk between 8:30 a.m. and 5 p.m. Monday through Friday at 805-470-3400 or cityclerk@atascadero.org. And we are now open for community forum. Welcome.
Good evening, Council, Mayor, and my name is Mike Zappas from Atascadero. I just have one real idea that I'd like to place, and that is that in Atascadero, we've suffered from commercial development being strung out along Highway 101. We've had many studies trying to address that problem. But I just want to urge you going forward, we can't do anything about the past, but as we have new projects coming along at Del Rio, and we have other projects that have been tried to start on the other end of town at Santa Barbara, think about maybe condensing our retail core. Maybe not approving all those projects on the far reaches, because really that's stringing our town out. It's not developing our core where we could have a very vibrant downtown, and hopefully we'll have that going forward. Anyway, that's my only comment. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Next speaker.
I brought goodies too. Hi, my name is Katie Mervin, and I'm here representing Cuesta College and then also the San Luis Obispo Child Care Planning Council. You guys did send us our proclamation and stating that April is both Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month. I just wanted to come visit you and let you know of a couple really important topics that we'll be covering in April, and one specific that we would love to have.
If you could keep near the microphone.
Some of your representation from. Thank you for the opportunity to come. April is Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month. We hope that you will join us and children and families of all ages at one of the many events during the month. Saturday, April 13th is 41st Annual Children's Day in the Plaza at Mission Plaza in downtown SLO. We'll be joined by 70 organizations sharing family fun activities and information. Saturday, April 6th is the Atascadero Children's Day in the Park. There a lot of local resources will be there also, and we'd love to have you guys join us. Additionally, the annual Child Abuse Prevention Academy will be held on April 26th at Cuesta College, and there's also multiple other activities happening in April. One of the most important things and the biggest reason I'm here is to invite you all to attend what we are calling a Where's the Care Town Hall. We're having a local and national crisis with child care, and we're bringing community members, city councils, Board of Supervisors together to talk about what we can do to solve the problem. So it's Wednesday, May 19th at Temple Beth David in San Luis Obispo. We'll be highlighting the urgency of issues affecting local early child care and education, including lack of accessibility and affordability, as well as a persistent workforce crisis within the field. In Atascadero specifically, there are 54 licensed care programs, and they have the capacity to serve 1,302 children. And we have many more children than that in our town. We urge the Atascadero City Council to send at least one representative, hopefully more, to attend on May 29th as we mobilize innovative solutions within our community to meet the challenges that impact families and children in local businesses. I encourage all of you in the room to keep children and families in your hearts, in your commitments, in everything you do every day and every year. It's our collective responsibility to demonstrate daily that our youth are our highest priority, as they will someday sit where you sit and make the decisions that you make. So we'd like to thank you for your effort to come and to uphold all of the important things that we want to do for children.
Thank you. And you can leave those bags with the chief right there.
You our classroom one time when I was in the Atascadero State Preschool. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Welcome, next speaker.
I am Heather Branton, pastor of Community Church of Atascadero, a congregation in covenant with the United Church of Christ. Now in my fifth year here as pastor, I continue to be extremely grateful and excited to be Community Church's pastor and a resident of Atascadero. Atascadero is a community of people from varying backgrounds with different political and religious perspectives, of a range of financial resources and educational accomplishments. And across those differences, my experience is of a people that are friendly, welcoming, and respectful. Yeah. Within my faith tradition, we affirm the wonderful diversity of creation. We seek to be a people of grace and hospitality, recognizing that we are all people on a journey, each of us continuing to grow and hopefully become all the good that we are capable of being. We don't always get it right. There are many, many people who have been traumatized as a direct result of their involvement in a church or other faith community. As a pastor, I do my best to facilitate healing, believing that each of us is sacred. I often remember in the first creation story in our scriptures how with every act of creation, God said, "Now that is good." As human beings and as people in faith communities, we have failed to recognize the goodness within those around us. So I come to you today to invite you to join me in celebrating the goodness in people. People around us, people within our own community of Atascadero. This coming Sunday, March 31st, is the Transgender Day of Visibility. Now, I am neither a scientist nor an expert on gender studies. I'm trying to educate myself through study to better understand people's experience. I am listening to others about the pain of having a disconnect between one's physical body and one's true inner self. I am listening to the hurt they have experienced as people who are transgender, being disowned by their families, being verbally and physically attacked, being told they are abominations or hated by God. But I am also a witness to the joy that comes when people are able to be seen, to be recognized and affirmed for who they are. I am seeing people emerge like butterflies when they're able to live as their authentic selves. Being able to witness that is to stand on holy ground. Mm-hmm. I began by saying how wonderful and welcoming it is to live in Atascadero. I invite you to delight in the diversity of the people among us. On Sunday, the Transgender Day of Visibility, Think about the people you know and the wonderfully unique expressions of who they are, and then celebrate the mystery and wonder of the diversity of creation and of the people among us. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Good evening. My name is Cinda Kane.
Oh, boy.
I'm not as good as that. And what I'm going to say is probably not going to be received as well as that. But the first thing I have to say, as a 20-year district attorney in both in Riverside, Butte, and Siskiyou counties, and as having insight into the San Luis Obispo district attorney's office, as my daughter is a San Luis Obispo district attorney, the Tascadero Police Department is looked upon by my daughter and her colleagues as exemplary. That means, and I know you guys know that, but I have to say that, you have to pay these people to keep good people. And without them, none of the good things that we can accomplish will be accomplished. And I don't want to forget the fire department. They are without doubt right up there with the police. But every day, if they're not there to help us, we're in trouble. The next thing I'm going to do is attack the Holy Grail of Atascadero. And I'm sorry to use the word attack, but because I'm only in my sixth month here, but, you know, I'm fairly observant, and my education has taken me all over the country, and I've lived in 8 states and 15 cities. We need land. We need to develop sales tax bases to keep growing. Mm-hmm. We've got a big piece of land out there. It's called the Sunken Gardens. This is my thought. Do with it as you please. Take half of it, keep one of the fountains next to the Taj Mahal, and the rest, by God, folks, we need parking. We are not going to have as core in this city, the core that this man talked about, a good, strong city center without parking. Last night we went to Streetside and we couldn't find a place to park. And we wanted to eat at that establishment. And in that large space, there could also be some retail. Now, I don't propose to be an architect nor a city planner, but it is only obvious to me as I come here that I did not come to Atascadero for the Sunken Gardens. For that matter, the Taj Mahal was unique. It's beautiful, but it didn't bring me here. What brought me here was the Central Coast, my family, and a desire to make Atascadero, which is close to San Luis.
Thank you.
But yet we're far.
Thank you.
A thriving place.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next speaker. Thank you.
Jim Shannon, Tascadero resident. I'm here to speak to, I know the last couple of meetings you guys have had talks and discussions about the homeless and what you're doing with Paso to Work Together, but I want to offer a resource that we have. I'm a member of Refuge Church here in Atascadero up on Portola Road. It's actually 6955 Portola Road. And right now going on up there is what we call our Open Arms Ministry, which is, lack of a better term, a soup kitchen. And so I want to let everybody know that in the community that that's available on Tuesday nights for people, homeless, families who are in need. The doors open at 5:15. You come in, we have a couple racks with groceries where they can get whatever they need. There's milk, eggs, fresh fruit, vegetables, just groceries that's provided by members of our fellowship. Also, we have some members of fellowship that work at grocery stores, and also we get help from the food bank as well. But we also have a bus that goes along El Camino. You can just call the church if some of the homeless, if you know anybody. I do have some cards I'm going to leave with the police chief. Maybe you can get them out to you guys. But there is a need. We see that. And we know that. So I just want to let you know, the community know. I don't know a lot of people know about that, but we're there to offer a meal, dessert, some beverages. Like I said, we have a bus we need to call the church to set up. It goes along El Camino. You can get picked up along there and dropped off there afterwards. In addition to that, there's clothing. We have a form you can fill out. Like if they're there tonight, they need clothing. They'll fill that out tonight. It'll be there for them next week. And I know there's a guy that was there last night or last week that just wanted a hot meal and a blanket. We didn't have a blanket for him, but we had the hot meal, and we had a lot of prayer for him and encouragement. And on top of that, there's a gospel message that's shared, about a 10-minute message. There's a time of worship. Just a beautiful time. And then also following that, at 6:45, we have a recovery group because a lot of the people that are in this situation also need that as well. And so we offer that as well at 6:45, and that's overseen by an associate pastor there. But the most important thing we do that night and every time we're at this church is share the gospel of Jesus Christ and offer prayer and a listening ear as well. I know for myself, I've been there for 10 years. I walked in there a broken man. I know what it's done in my life. And I encourage anybody here that's struggling with anything to put Jesus first in your life. He'll do amazing things with you. I'll just say that it's something we've done for many years here. I don't know. I've been there for 10. I think it started maybe 6-7 years ago. We did have it at downtown one time, but we've moved it back to the church where it's more convenient for the meals and preparing and all that. But it's just a blessing to serve, a blessing to help those people in need. And, you know, again, it's just another resource. I hope that maybe you guys can help share that message. You know, we drive up and down our community all over town. We see people that are hurting and need that, you know, and we can't make them do anything, but we can share a gospel and give them hope. You know, all this other stuff we're talking about, you've been talking about, that's great, but there's got to be an avenue out of that, and that's Jesus Christ. So thank you.
Thank you. And you can leave that with the chief.
Yeah.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Well, good evening. Great comments by everybody. I could focus on everything that everyone has said. It's been so good to hear. My name is Dennis Schmidt, 8675 Santa Rosa Road, and the cynic in me is going to say where everyone drives by at 45 miles an hour. And if you heard that, maybe consider doing the speed limit as you drive anywhere, because our streets are designed for speed limits, and you don't have to wait if you drive slower. It's great. Nonetheless, I'm not here for that. I'm here. I saw a sign up here that said Atascadero is open for business. Well, I have always supported the city strongly in everything that I do. Often people, I hear people say the city's difficult to work with, and I look at them and I say, what's your problem? I mean, staff is willing to go out of their way, our council, everyone is going out of their way to make our community better. There's no question about that. However, 2 weeks ago, here, there was an authorization for a general plan amendment, which I thought was a no-brainer when I heard the authorization, and then I was shocked to see what resulted from that hearing, and that was there was no help given to this person. To me, although staff might not have the time because of council priorities for other things, a simple solution to the problem would have been to offer the applicant to get into a time and material contract with a consultant, an outside consultant who could do the work, and then relieve staff of that time. And then if the applicant decides he doesn't want to do that, then that's his choice. But in this particular case, where we always seem to be wanting to help people, this case we didn't. It was a very, very simple project. There was questions asked about other general plan amendments that have occurred. We had one that was on the south side of our community. When Dennis Maresco did a general plan amendment in that particular area, and there weren't even utilities in that area. They had to be brought out to the particular site, and it was approved. At that time, we had Walmart, we had Eagle Ranch. We had a lot of priorities going at that time, but there was a moment that could have happened. In closing, timing is important. In thinking about this, I remember a time in the early 80s when my parents were developing property in Los Sosos and Morro Bay. And the Coastal Commission looked at a project they had and required curb, gutter, and sidewalk for a project that never requires curb, gutter, and sidewalk. It took 6 months to turn that ball around, and in that 6 months, interest rates shot up, and my parents were not able to do it. So anyway, please afford the time for this person to do his project.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next speaker.
Hi, Mayor and Council members. I'm here today to talk
Just state your name for the record,
please. Oh, sorry. Tave Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Christensen.
I'm here to talk about our homeless encamp that we have right here in El Camino Real, right next to this nice new donut shop that's opened up. And I drive by there every single day, and it's been there a month and a half now, and doesn't seem that anybody is doing anything to get them to move on. I've gone by and taken pictures. There's tons of trash, alcohol bottles, things like that. You walk down the alleyway, it smells like urine. I just think that that's something that's right out on our main street that people drive by every day. We seriously need to pay attention to it and find a solution and move them on, find somewhere else for them to stay. They probably won't be accepted into Echo, which is really, I think, the only homeless place here in Atascadero because of their drinking and that. But I'd like to see something done fairly soon about them. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have anyone else wishing to speak? Great. Next speaker. If there's anyone else who would like to, if you would go ahead and line up. Welcome.
My name is Sherry Cleveland.
Good evening, Mayor and members of the council. My husband, Eric, was the applicant for the project that you denied a couple weeks ago due to staff time.
Yeah, if you could bring that down
right
a little
now.
Bit so we could hear you. Thank
Sorry.
You.
Sorry. He's out of town right now, and so I'm here to speak for him. Lucky me. We were not aware of the option of you hiring another company to process the application until Dennis, that I do not even know, a former planning commissioner, contacted us, my husband. This process sounds like a win-win for our project. We won't need to wait another 5 years. We can get more houses on as mandated by the state law and increase the property taxes as the project is developed. With this new information, we're not sure if you can approve us for submitting our application. And if you're not able to comment tonight, my husband will be reaching out to each of you and Mr. Dunsmore next week when he's back in town to see how we can get this project considered again. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Is there anyone else wishing to speak at public comment? Seeing none, I'll close community forum and bring it back to the council and staff. I would ask maybe the chief, someone could speak with Mr. Christensen and his photos and take care of that. That would be great. Mrs. Cleveland and Mr. Schmidt, regarding your comments, it's nothing that we can be discussing tonight. It wasn't an easy decision. It doesn't mean that we're not open for business. We have to weigh all of the things that we have to do and the capacity that we have. So that is what it is. If there is some way to go about it that miraculously removes 90% of the work of staff, I think any of us up here would be willing to hear that, but maybe start with staff first. If you come to us, all we can do is go to staff and say, what are the, so maybe, speak with the city manager. Do you have anything, Ms. City Manager, to comment regarding that, or should we just take that offline?
I think it'd probably be easiest to take it offline at this
point. Sounds good. All right. Thank you all for coming out. And now for the rest of our meeting. We're moving on to a public hearing. This is a 2019 Community Development Block Grant Funding Recommendations. And this will be by our Public Works Director, Nick DeBar.
Thank you, Mayor Moreno. These are actually, it's always confusing if you look to the Community Development Director, me on this one, but it's me. Back in December, we had draft recommendations for the 2019 grant allocations, and there's an estimated amount of $128,031 plus or Morro Bay repayment of that loan that we provided them a few years back of just under $53,000 for a total of $181,000. There's also a fund balance from previous years' projects that were not spent of $11,372. And as I mentioned, the draft funding recommendations were made back on December 11th. So tonight is actually to have final recommendations for these CDBG grant funds. One of the things, a lot has happened actually since December, as you're all aware. The city of Atascadero and Paso Robles, along with ECHO and some other homeless advocates, have really taken an integrated approach, coordinated integrated approach to the homelessness in the North County, and which has affected this grant application, the draft recommendations. In support of that, we did receive an application from ECHO as part of this coordinated effort to build some facilities. Paso Robles is pursuing a permanent warming shelter. And as part of that, ECHO is looking to expand their facility and do some improvements there as well. And the application we received from ECHO would be to a public facilities piece of the CDBG money. To that, previously the draft recommendation had, back in December, had that going to our next accessibility project, which was the sidewalk along Santa Rosa Road in between 101 northbound on and off ramp and El Camino, basically behind the Motel 6 right along there, to redo that sidewalk and do some improvements there. We're recommending maybe that get delayed a year so we can accommodate ECHO in this integrated approach that the North County has. So one of the modifications to the funding would be to have all the public facilities monies, both the 2019 Atascadero allocation plus that Morro Bay repayment of $136,149, actually go to the ECHO application. And then also, since we are delaying that, there was some two reallocation monies that were available, the fund balance that were going to go to the recommended to go to the Santa Rosa sidewalk project. So we're recommending that go to the summer's project, the 2018 project at Traffic Way, redoing a lot of that sidewalk. Just for some of the costs that we don't know yet, that project is actually ready to bid. We're talking to some of the adjacent property owners right now to finalize up some final designs there. So and once we do that, we'll be able to move that ahead. And then we don't know the final amounts that we'll be receiving from the county, but one of the recommendations is that typically in the past, traditionally, we've just proportionally reallocated those amounts, and it's usually a little bit more than what we are initially told. So this spreadsheet kind of shows kind of the draft recommendations and that first column on, or the middle column there, back in December, and the suggested recommendation for the final approvals. On the top there, public facilities, the Santa Rosa project, $83,220, as well as the Morro Bay reallocation of $52,929. Initially, that was recommended to go to the Santa Rosa project to go to ECHO. And then the public services, these are the same. ECHO for some of their operational expenses of $9,800. And the Recreation Department at the city for youth scholarships, $9,405. And then the administration costs are the same as well. And one of the things I might add, too, as part of the city's allocation, none of that the county made the city whole last year with some of that money that they withheld from the Morro Bay reallocation, so we're all good there. So a total of, this is 180, this is a mistake. And the total estimated 2019 grant funds is $180,960. And then that reallocation portion on the bottom, as I mentioned, from the Santa Rosa project at Traffic Way. So with that, the recommendation tonight is to review and approve the funding recommendations for CDBG program as shown and authorize staff to adjust final award amounts proportional to receipt of the final funding amount. And I know two representatives from ECHO are here. If you have any questions on their application, the city manager can also answer questions with the integrated approach to the North County homelessness. And with that, I can answer any questions you have on this too.
Thank you, Mr. DeBar. And just so for the public to be clear, so we get community development block grants every year. This is from the federal government. And we get applications from organizations who need those funds. And it's generally for lower income. There's all sorts of requirements, as you can imagine, with a federal fund or with a federal grant or any sort of federal money. And so we allocated that last December. And so what's before us today is to say, hey, some of this money that was allocated to some sidewalk ADA accessibility improvements, we want to reallocate that to ECHO for some improvements that they want to be doing in the near future. Tonight, we're not approving any improvements that ECHO is doing. We're simply saying, hey, we would like to give this money to ECHO instead of to this sidewalk project, and then we'll look at doing that another year. And then there's a small adjustment of $11,000 and change going from one sidewalk project to another. So that's really what we're looking at tonight. Before we do have questions of council, we need to discuss any ex parte, which is, did we have any outside communication that will in any way affect our decision? So we'll go from my left to my right. Any ex parte?
No.
I've had several conversations with Wendy Lewis of ECHO, Mr. Gobler of ECHO, and attended a city council meeting in Paso regarding this. So.
And I've had several conversations also with Wendy Lewis and with the mayor and Mayor Pro Tem and city manager in Paso Robles.
I too have had several conversations with Wendy Lewis, Eric Gobler, and people who are volunteering with a variety of homeless outreach services.
Thank you. So before we open up to ECHO or to the public, does anyone in the council have questions of staff?
I can wait till after. If ECHO's going to speak, I can wait till after that.
Okay. So why don't we go ahead and open up to public comment, but first if we could bring up ECHO and kind of have you as the applicant, if you will, and anything that you would like to say, and then if we've got some questions, and then we'll open it up for the rest of the public.
Thank you, Mayor Moreno and Honorable City Council. Before I get into this, I just want to say, I want to echo, if I may, City Manager's comments about the Dancing with the Stars event. It's one of the premier events, I think, of the city. And it raises money for nonprofit organizations. And to have three of the dancers who spend hundreds of hours in preparation and raising money for nonprofits locally, it says a lot about Atascadero. So I thank you guys for doing that. The bar is risen for those that didn't dance this year that may want to consider that next year. My name's Eric Gobler. I'm the ECHO Board Chair, and I'm proudly involved in what I believe is one of San Luis Obispo County's gem nonprofit organizations, the El Camino Homeless Organization. With assistance of more than 1,000 volunteers and hundreds of financial donors, we've been able to keep the doors open at ECHO to serve the homeless community in our area. As you know, the ECHO shelter is a significant resource, not just to Atascadero, but to San Luis Obispo County as a whole. Our shelter facility was old in 2014 when we moved in, and the facility is aging every year, so there's many, many improvements physically that can be made to the building. I believe you saw a list of at least some of those. On behalf of the residents that we serve and the ECHO organization as a whole, we greatly appreciate the staff's recommendation to award the 2019 CDBG Public Facilities Funds to ECHO, and also the continued support for the public services portion of that grant, too. I assure you, if this is approved by you tonight, we will put it to good use. It will go to the main things that we need to do to improve the health and well-being of the residents that we serve, and we'll make sure that the facility is improved the way that it needs to be. So thank you for considering this. Wendy Lewis, our president and CEO, is here to speak also.
I was thinking also maybe just for the edification of the public, let them know what you are looking to do with the money, just so the public's aware. Wendy, okay, great. Yep. Thanks.
So thank you for this opportunity and for having us back. Thank you, Eric. You did a great job. I'm glad you said the facility is aging and not me, so thanks for that. So we strive to provide the best environment to the people we serve, and our building is aging, and we want to utilize these funds in order to improve the building so we have a long life at ECHO to provide these services. The main priority is in our first phase of capital improvements. It's to add in our individual side of the shelter. So picture a long, very long building. Half of the shelter is set up for individual females and individual males. The other part of the shelter is set up for families to stay together as a family unit. In the individual side, it's currently an open dormitory using partitions to separate the living quarters. In homeless services, that's not ideal for the health and the safety of the people we're serving. If there's some sort of illness, flu, or something, open dormitory is the best way to spread that, which we would like to prevent. So part of the funds, about 60%, would be used to build 6 rooms, which would give us the ability to not only provide better environment, including better sleep for the people we're serving, which if you're getting better sleep, you're able to then go lurk for work, go to school, do the things you need to do. It'll also give us the ability to add additional 10 beds, some in the individual sides, and then some in the family area as well. So the walls would go to the ceiling, so people would have the ability to have more space, more private space, a better place for sleep, illness prevention. It would also give us the potential to, if we're able to add the 10 additional beds that'll be going before council in the next couple months, we would be able to help the medically fragile as they transition out of the hospital. On the family side, the hopes would be is to create some additional beds in that area as well, but also just to make the area just better for giving people the ability to thrive. Right now, when I walk people through, I'm very proud that we have family areas so families can stay together, but I always have to say, and we're wanting to make this feel better for the people we're helping. So those are the big bulk. Some of the funds would be used for ADA ability to upgrade a couple of our restrooms that are in need for that ability, and just overall give us more of a foundation for the future.
Thank you. Does any council member have a question of ECHO staff? Mayor Pro Tem Borbo, followed by Council Member Funk.
I just question Wendy, although it might be really in Mr. DeBar's wheelhouse. This is $89,000. You're requesting a whole bunch of money through the HEAP program in conjunction with PASO, and I'm looking at that joint application here. And you've described kind of the physical improvements. In terms of how this is technically administered, are these funds that we're talking about here tonight going to go for the specific things you talked about, or just a portion of them? And in administering that, is that something that just has to be carefully tracked, or how does that play out?
So this portion, and when we submitted the HEAP application, we actually had 3 phases in our capital ask. this was one of the phases which we've identified as the top priority, the families in the individual area. When we submitted the HEAP application in partnership with the City of Paso, we hadn't had the answer on if the project had to fall under prevailing wage. So our budget that we submitted within the HEAP proposal actually is about $130,000-$140,000, coincidentally, probably short now if that is awarded, because of that piece that we didn't have information on yet. We found it out just recently from Tony Navarro with County Planning, who oversees that program. And so this would actually help us be able to, if those funding happen, be able to do the whole project with the meld of the two funding pools.
All right. Thank you.
Councilmember Funk.
Thank you. Thank you for this application. We are all hoping that the joint application for HEAP funding from City of Paso and ECHO and Paso Cares will be successful. My question for you is, if that grant is not funded at the level that we are hoping it will be, is ECHO prepared to use this money from the City of Atascadero in a timely fashion in furthering its objectives?
Yes, this was actually such a good opportunity because we are all hopeful for that HEAP funding to come through. Mm-hmm. But if it doesn't, for some reason unknown that we don't know, this would actually be our ability to do something. Without this funds, we would not have the ability. So that would at least get us started on our overall needs and our priority as well. I had a conversation with County Planning, Tony Navarro, last Friday, and also Laurel Weir, who oversees homeless services in our county. They asked very specific questions about these two pools, the CDBG mm-hmm. and the HEAP, and they are also looking at it as an overall, and I think very hopeful on that piece with the questions they asked and the communications between the city and them. So, but we would love this as a backup if that doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Seeing no other questions from council, thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yes, and we'll go ahead and open it up to public comment on this item. Any members of the public wishing to speak on this item? All right, seeing none, we'll bring it back to council for a discussion or a motion. Well, if everybody doesn't want to move at once, yep. I am happy to go ahead and actually move staff's recommendation, gladly so.
I'll second that.
If there's an opportunity for discussion, I would note that this is a strategic opportunity for
yes,
us
it is.
To invest in services that our community critically needs and in the capacity to serve. You know, as we've heard just at the beginning of the council meeting, there's continued right. need in our community for this. For these services.
Thank you. We have a first by Mayor Moreno and a second by Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. All right. We are now moving on to management reports, and this is our La Plaza Public Plaza Plans. Say that 10 times fast. La Plaza Public Plaza Plans. Yeah. And this will be our Community Development Director, Phil Dunsmore.
Thank you, Mayor, and good evening, Council. I would like to talk a little bit tonight just about not only the past for this property, where we are with the La Plaza project, and a couple of conceptual plans for creating our next public plaza, our next downtown space, really, to serve the public on a very important piece of land right here in the heart of our community. We've heard a lot about the La Plaza project. It's something that was just about a year ago that our city council granted final approval to, and we're right now just about to issue the final set of construction permits. We're going through the final review of that project. They've already begun early grading, and things are getting off to a good start. So dramatic changes happening with this property, such an important piece of our downtown. When it was approved in 2018, we also approved a concept for a public plaza that would take place of what we call a Atascadero Mall, which is a street system that was a remnant of what was left over from the early days of Atascadero. Here's a site plan of the project. So the far right of that plan is that early concept of this public plaza that would take place of the streets that are there today. And this is sort of a rendering of the project that's going to be moving forward. And that project consists of about 42 residential units and a series of commercial spaces on the ground floor that would really make our downtown, with additional restaurants and retail spaces and other uses that really fit that location. So I'll look back in history. This is the 1950s, a very changing time for Atascadero. It was when Highway 101 was built through our downtown. I love to look back at this picture because it was really such a shift, moving Highway 101 from its location on El Camino Real to a new location and sort of taking a big eraser through that early city plan of Atascadero Mall and really changing the whole format of the town forever. Here it was about 15 years later, Highway 101 began to get established. This is the late 1960s, looking from our upstairs window in City Hall, across the park, and across to that area today that we call Atascadero Mall, which is sort of just a little remnant street that was cut off by the freeway and surrounded by a couple of fuel stations. In fact, in this picture, they were demolishing an additional fuel station that was actually in Sunken Gardens Park. So I think I heard some public comments tonight about developing that park. Well, it began to go that way in the 50s, and we went back, and we removed that gas station, and it again became the once very important Sunken Gardens Park, which is really the center of our community where we hold many events. Fast forward to close to today, Highway 101 as it exists through that area and that core and the El Camino Real and that little remnant street and the once vacant lot that's now being filled in by the La Plaza project. And here's a view looking at that little area. This is our project site we're talking about tonight. Still flanked on one side by a service station and an auto repair shop. So here's the space. Here's what we're talking about. You see that green image on the map that I just brought up? That's the area we're talking about for the plaza. It doesn't take up the entirety of that street area, as part of that street system is already part of the private property for the La Plaza project. And that was a part we also did what we call a road abandonment on to eliminate the access easement on top of that property, so that the La Plaza project could be built in the format that it was approved. And as a condition of that, we required the completion of this plaza area on the area that you see in green. And if I gradually blend in that plaza plan, that's approximately how that plaza fits onto the site. A little portion of it does extend onto the property for the La Plaza project, but the majority of it is public space, which really is still part of that road. It's still public right away. And it extends all the way over and covers the sidewalk that's now in front of Clem's Gas Station and La Rosa's Automotive, and really serves as this access way for that really important pedestrian tunnel. In developing plans for the plaza, we have a lot of constraints that we had to analyze. A lot of underground utilities run through this space. There's a high-pressure gas line. There's a water line, there's fiber optics lines, there's other electrical lines that go through it. Whenever you have a street, people use streets for all of these utilities, and those are some of the obstacles we have to face going through that. We also have to look at the issues about safety and security and visibility and the ongoing maintenance of this space. How can kids continue to walk through it? How can we have it secure so that we can enforce any issues that are there? How can we maintain good line of sight from El Camino Real? These are all of the topics that we've been talking with all of our departments in the city with, our police folks, our public works teams, our fire response folks, the property owners that surround these properties. It's been a lot to go through over the last year to look at how we can evolve into a really nice, usable public space while accommodating all of these needs, and while still accommodating access to the businesses that will remain on the south side for now, such as La Rosa's Automotive and the Clem's Fuel Station. So here we are today. Again, this is about 3 o'clock. The stream of kids running out from that spot. This is one of our constraints we need to look at. Accommodating that vehicle access and accommodating this huge stream of kids that pour out every day and utilize this space to get safe access across El Camino Real. And right now you can sort of see they stream out all over the place and they use the street anyway and they use the sidewalk and they use the whole area sort of as a plaza. One of the factors that we've also looked at too is what's the significance of the view shed of City Hall from Highway 101. I took this image off Google Earth, so I didn't drive or walk anywhere to get this image. I went and got this off Google Earth, and you can see actually, and I'm going through using their sort of feature of Street View, and I caught this little glimpse right here as you pass over the bridge that goes over the pedestrian tunnel. This is looking towards traffic on the southbound lane. So what do we envision this space to be? We envision it to space that can not only be used for outdoor dining for the La Plaza project and future restaurants and uses that front it, it's also a space we can use for events. It could be an expansion of Sunken Gardens Park. It could be an expansion of other areas that we use for events. It's also, as I mentioned, a very important pedestrian access to the other side of Atascadero, to our west side. It's unfortunate when the freeway was built, they didn't envision that and create a larger access and maybe do an underpass through our city or an overpass, something that just kept that corridor open. But it didn't happen. We have the pedestrian access, and we need to make the best of what we have. So enough of my chatter. Let's get on with the design concepts. What have we come up with? What are the two scenarios we've come up with? And what are the options that we have? Well, the first one is really pretty simple. It looks at creating two rows of trees, a row of street lights on each side, which are the acorn lights that we have throughout our downtown zone now, and then utilizing really high-strength cables and string lights to create a space, to wrap that space, to securely light it, and when you walk through there, to feel like you're within this space that's created by the trees and the lighting and the light posts. What this plan does, it envisions this being a complete plaza without vehicular access. But for now, it also reserves vehicular access on the south side of the plaza. And we do that by building the entire plaza, putting in all the improvements, and allowing vehicles to drive over that very southerly portion and separating the vehicles from the pedestrians with a low metal, I'll call it a metal picket fence. It's like looks like a wrought iron fence, about 3.5 feet tall, 4 feet tall, that would be very similar to the iron fences that you see around town. In fact, there's one that's right adjacent to the tunnel, and I'll show you some of those design ideas. So that fence would be locked into a removable system where during certain times you could pull the fence out if you're having an event, so you could open up the entire area when the businesses are closed or we didn't need that vehicular access. And also looking to the future, as these other properties develop, that fence could be removed and you have that entire plaza. Rather than develop a portion of these improvements now, it looks at developing the whole thing for the future, but just allowing vehicular access over a portion. So if I was to look at how this concept would appear, if I was standing across the street on El Camino, sort of in front of the Sunken Gardens Park, looking at that tunnel opening. If I was to add color to this, this is somewhat how that would appear. And this really shows if those two rows of trees were at their full maturity. And we're looking at different tree varieties. This tree variety would be a medium-sized tree. The trees in the back there are really up against the slope, sort of little accent trees. And again, you're seeing a lot of fencing there, but the reality is that fencing on the left is really sort of an added angle to guide vehicles to go into the existing fuel station. Whereas the fencing on the right is really part of the La Plaza project to outline an outdoor dining area that would be part of a restaurant so that they could have outdoor service. And again, this plaza would be something that You'd be able to drive food trucks into. You could use it for events. You could set up a temporary stage. We envision it having benches for seating. We envision it having lots of shade and being a real focal point of the community and a real accent to the La Plaza project. So let's take a look at the second concept. The second concept really emphasizes the use of getting shade in this site early on. Still utilizing two rows of trees, but really emphasizing that those two rows of trees are going to take some years to mature and develop that shade. And this is a pretty massive space. It's about 250 feet long. It's at least 60 to 70 feet wide. And if we want to have events here and make it a community focal point, we want to ensure that it has shade. So this design has two sections of pergolas. And the idea is that they're a pergola with a classic design that has columns that really echo the columns on City Hall and the columns that are proposed in La Plaza Project, and has a trellis on top of that that supports vines, supports green growth, and has really good shade. Now, what I've got in this site plan, I'm showing you one of those pergolas fully built out as a trellis with the vines on it. The other one would be the same way. I'm just showing that for just sort of emphasis of where that area would be. And it'd be centered upon that plaza in between those two rows of trees. And at the very rear, you see those red circles. Those are sort of accent trees that would provide color as a focal point to look through onto the plaza. So the only difference between this and the plan one is the fact that we're replacing the string lights across this with a permanent structure that has these columns that support a trellis that cover a lot of this plaza area. And if I look at that in an elevation view, if I'm looking at this again from El Camino Real through this plaza, here's what it might appear like in black and white, of course. And you see that pergola, it's sort of cantilevered over. And the reason it's done that way is, again, because of the underground utilities here, we have very few options to actually build a foundation and do a support structure. And so what we did is we designed something that has a single row of columns and has what I'll call a cantilevered out trellis that's supported by cables. It'd still be what we're proposing, a metal structure about 15 feet off the ground, pretty tall, so that you could get underneath it with not only emergency vehicles but other equipment, food trucks, and have it define the space but not impose the space and make it so imposing that it becomes too concealing. So the pergola ideas that we're thinking about are really based off what was recently built right across the street from us at the junior high. This is a much, much smaller, different version, but the idea is there. Utilizing a column, utilizing a metal, and that when I say metal, either aluminum or powder-coated steel, trellis feature, and that's what this one is here, that would be a really long-lasting, low-maintenance trellis feature that you could grow vines onto. Of course, that feature in this plaza would be a lot bigger and a little bit taller, but based on these same kind of design principles to create a real long-lasting, high-quality feature that would produce the quicker shade that you could grow things onto. We've also looked and evaluated what tree varieties could work here. And we've got tree varieties that would be smaller trees like the crepe myrtle and the strawberry tree. Those are trees that we have all around our downtown right now. In fact, the strawberry tree and the crepe myrtle are the two tree varieties that are in the median in front of the Carlton. And they're doing really well. They do really well in our downtown. There's a few other locations that have them. The crepe myrtle flowers wonderfully. That'd be a good tree for an accent tree right up against the slope right at the back of the plaza. The strawberry tree could be a tree actually used in the plaza if we wanted a much smaller tree. It's a real durable sort of tree. Going a little larger, more on the medium size of tree, there's a couple different varieties of oak. One is deciduous, one is evergreen, one is called the black oak, which is actually an oak that grows native close to here on Highway 46. I don't know if you've been out on Highway 46 in the fall. You see those patches of gold out there when you go up through 46 out towards Cambria. That's the black oak. Incredibly beautiful tree. Does great in a landscape and an urban environment as well. But it's not the giant oak trees. It's a little bit smaller. and it's deciduous, and it doesn't make a tremendous mess all year. It just drops leaves once a year, and there's smaller leaves. Then there's the southern oak, which is an evergreen tree, and they planted a series of those in the park in Paso. And they've done wonderful. The trees in that picture there, they're about 20 years old in Barney Schwartz Park. Great medium-sized tree. It's evergreen. It's got a beautiful shaped oak tree leaf. And doesn't have the thorny leaf of our coast live oak and doesn't drop nearly as much. And it's more well-behaved. So that's what, those are the couple of varieties we're looking at. So we're thinking about these different trees and how they could fit in this plaza and how they might work for a lower maintenance type situation. Adding a little bit of color, adding a little bit of shade, but also adding some, sort of enclosing this space. So tonight, what we're looking for from the City Council is really giving us some definitive direction to finalize the design concept. We're still going to continue to work with the Plaza Development Team to really finalize construction drawings. They really need to get this component into their construction drawings so they can complete moving forward with that part of the project. Now, there is sort of a couple different paths this can go, because we have required that this plaza be complete in conjunction with occupying La Plaza project. We did offer through the La Plaza project approval that they could be eligible for a reimbursement of the parkland impact fees if they build this plaza. Now, if the cost of it dramatically exceeds that, it could become a city project. The issue is, if the cost is too high, it also could trigger their project to become all prevailing wage, which is also a challenge. So we're evaluating those issues and whether or not this can continue to be part of the private development project or whether it needs to be a city park project to fund it that way. And we can talk about that a little further. But at this point, I'd be happy to answer your questions and we can talk about some of those details. I think in the end, after you do provide us direction, we're happy to also bring a final design plan back to you, a construction plan, to show you the details if you provide us some direction to go that way. Thank you.
Thank you, Director. So you're looking for a design concept. You're not looking for us to get down into the weeds and talk, could you move this 6 inches over here or that. We're talking concept. We're trying to be somewhat big picture here, correct?
Absolutely, because we don't have those fine details ourselves yet. So we don't show things in here like street furniture. What I'm saying is, we don't have the exact design of the fencing yet. We don't have whether or not we're going to put some benches in here. So we're looking for your direction on those items, and then we can take it and we can really refine that down and we can get the cost estimates and do those things. But I think at this level, we're really looking, for a little higher level concept in the general direction, and we can take it the rest of the way.
And then regarding what you said about funding, is this a public project or is it a private project? Does that impact our decision tonight? Meaning, is that something you find out later, whether we choose one or two, you find that out later, and then that's all worked out?
It shouldn't affect your decision tonight.
Okay, that's
so that's
my question.
On our end. I think your decision should be based on what's best for our community from a design standpoint.
Okay.
Not relying on that issue.
Okay, thank you. So what I would like to do, just briefly, I know this is a little out of the ordinary, but prior to council questions of staff, I did have a brief conversation with Mr. Zappas today, one of many, and I would just like to hear from you. I think we would all like to hear from you. What is your preference on these scenarios as we go about this decision-making process?
Good evening, Mayor. Thank you for the opportunity. We think either one of the two alternatives are excellent. We really like it. There's a lot of constraints in that area that the director has already pointed out. So we understand the difficulty with that. I guess the only thing that I would say as you go down this road is that what we've learned, two things. First of all, get a real good bearing on all those utilities and get their buy-in. The second thing is environmentally, we're now at a much later stage in our project trying to grapple with the environmental issues. And I don't know if it's going to trigger in this plaza area. They haven't really talked to us about it. But with all the gas stations in the area, environmental health is really breathing down our neck right now. So those two things, I would just encourage you. I think that I have had some conversations with the water department, and I know they're very concerned about things over their water lines. I've talked to Phil about the idea of maybe having raised planters for the trees so that the trees aren't encroaching into the water lines. So those are just some of my concerns, but I think it looks beautiful. I really like it. I love the fact that you're putting some trees in there. It'll soften it. It'll give us some shade. All those varieties of trees I think are excellent. So good job. Any questions for me?
If you had to, well, we don't want to ask questions of you yet, but if you had to choose between one and two, we had this conversation today, so I'm asking you to say what you told me.
I like the pergola idea. I love bringing the columns in. Of course, as you know, we're sort of passionate about the architecture that was brought to Atascadero early on, the Palladian style. So I really think that would be beautiful to put that in there if we can make that happen.
Okay.
That's my favorite.
Thank you. Okay, and we may bring you back up for questions. Thank you, Mr. Zappas. All right, let's go ahead and go to questions of staff. I'll go by the lights. We'll start with Council Member Funk.
Thank you. This is exciting to see this project moving forward. A number of questions on it in no particular order. We're talking, as we look at this, the photo that's before us now, plans are in place, under consideration for the El Camino traffic calming project to also be in this area. Could you talk about how this plaza space will interact with what the main couple of options that might occur in the El Camino Real space immediately between the plaza and the Sunken Gardens?
Sure. Well, most importantly, the La Plaza project has a condition of approval to construct a pedestrian crossing and signalization at West Mall, really to safely get students across the street at the opposite corner they're in now. So bringing that controlled intersection a little bit closer to this plaza. So the idea through this design of traffic calming and through the plaza is to really make sure that happens. Now, looking at traffic calming, we don't have an approved design on the table, and we're looking at design options. We're going to do a heck of a lot of public outreach on that. Mm-hmm. We know that we're going to have to design whatever improvements we do in El Camino to match whatever we approve in this plaza. So we have that opportunity to do that and to continue to morph that design mm-hmm. together for whatever issues that come up into that. So I think we've taken that into consideration.
Okay. Is there any way, we noticed that you were looking currently at plans that have two rows of trees of similar size in a space which has lower buildings on one side and will have a much taller structure on the other. Is there any reason we couldn't stair-step that with smaller, more decorative trees through the center and then a higher row of trees, particularly if we're doing the pergola, and stair-step it up the building? So that we get the effect of the larger trees next to the building, but don't take out the sight line to the City Hall.
These are certainly options. We have to think about La Plaza, too, on the other side of the plaza. And I don't mean La Plaza, too, but what if the other side of the property develops with larger buildings and other things? Then we'd be off balance at that point. So we have to think that the properties to the south are likely to redevelop at some point in history in the future. And this plaza is really a permanent installation. So if we design it solely around what's there on the south side now, I think it might be short-sighted to do that. So I think we're better off looking at something that's fairly balanced and symmetrical, just like Sunken Gardens Park is. It has trees of equal size on either side. And those are some of the things that we've looked at. It's certainly an option that we can shift things around. I think it's at the council's pleasure or the community's pleasure for that matter. I think what looks best, for what is planned now, but also keeping in mind that things could drastically change in the future for that surrounding property.
Okay. And my understanding with regard to the trees, that it will basically take about 15 years before the trees would grow in sufficiently to provide shade in that space.
Could be a little less, but that's probably a good estimate. If we look at For example, the trees that are planted along El Camino Real now that are in front of the Carlton Hotel, the sycamore trees and the ones in the median, they're about, you know, they're about 15 years old. They were planted about that time frame, and now they're just getting to that size where it's about the right size. You look at them and say, yeah, that's producing shade. It's doing something. Now they're in a very small planter in the street, so they're kind of scrunched and they're under a little more stress. So based on how these are planted and what kind of planting space they're given, what kind of soil they're given, can drastically change that outcome and the varieties that we choose. So generally that's a good time frame to say, but it could change drastically with variety and type of planting.
Okay. And then on the, you talked about lighting being different if we have the pergolas versus the only the trees. Mm-hmm. Is there a way to do the, invite, if we use the pergolas, to have lighting that is equally inviting to welcome people into space?
I think I forgot, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think I forgot to mention that about the pergola. Because the pergola actually offers a fantastic opportunity to support lighting, whether it's the same kind of string lighting or whether it's lights that are built into that structure that are low-voltage lighting that accent the architectural features of that structure while lighting the space below for security. Mm. Countless options for that to really beautify the space with lighting and provide security for that space and get that same feeling with either type of project.
Okay, I may come back with other questions, but I'll leave it to the rest of the council.
Mayor Pro Tem Morbo.
Thank you. I want to go back and address in greater detail what I think is an extremely significant issue, and that's the funding piece that the mayor kind of alluded to. In the staff report, you mentioned $138,000 in parkland impact fees that the project would typically be required to pay due to its size, et cetera, that could be instead used directly by the developer. Instead of them paying those fees, that they could apply that directly to building the plaza. That's correct?
That is correct. So and we're still, I mean, I'm just going to stop you real quick because we're still waiting for a judgment from the Department of Real Estate on whether or not that forgiveness of that amount would trigger prevailing wage. They have to give us a judgment on that. We're still waiting for that. I'm working with our city attorney to get that. You know, our belief is that it may be considered de minimis and not, but we're still waiting for that outcome.
Okay. What I wanted to get at is that, so if we chose an option or it came to pass that whatever is built cost more than the amount of the fees, then either the developer would have to pick that up or there'd have to be a city contribution from our parkland impact fee account, which I assume then would automatically trigger prevailing wage requirement?
That's right.
Let me answer that.
Okay.
If the park becomes more than the available fees, it is our proposal that the city build that so that we don't trigger prevailing wage for the La Plaza project. So okay. It would become a city project rather than a contribution to the developer.
Okay, great, because you're saying it could trigger for the entire project, not
correct.
Just this park piece of
correct.
It. I understand that would make sense. But I guess my point or question being that if it gets over the amount that would otherwise be contributed by the developer and parkland impact fees, if it gets over that amount, it's going to trigger prevailing wage, which would then increase the cost of the plaza portion, I mean, this public plaza portion. I mean, the cost is going to go up if we trigger prevailing wage.
That is correct. I will tell you that, and Mr. Zappas might have a better idea, but we did preliminary cost out that cement and a lot of that, just the trees and the plantings and the utilities and the flat work that's there. It would be a bargain to get it for $138,000. So because this is such a huge, important part of our downtown, we certainly want to work with them to make sure that we get the right project there without bankrupting the project for sure.
Well, exactly. That's why I was kind of asking the question to see that whether there's a prerequisite, if you will, to keep the cost down to this parkland fee mountain. Sounds like that may not be realistic anyway.
That would be my gut in talking with Mr. Okay. DeBar and his staff.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. And then question on the pergola, because you're talking about cantilevering this pergola because you don't want to dig in the ground and, you know, build a foundation on top of or too far down into utility pipelines. I'm no engineer, but I guess I don't see how, like, if you look at the very small one at the junior high you showed, why these have to be dug into the ground anyway. You know, they weigh a lot. They're not going anywhere. And so I guess just question for your consideration as to whether how significant of an issue is that in terms of the big picture of whether you have to go with a cantilevered pergola or just a pergola with two sides of legs.
I think it's a design option. If you go with a cantilever, you know, you're going to have a bigger footing and more stout column to hold that up on the one side. You go with, you know, but it's more open, obviously, and it provides you a more usable space out there versus like the junior high photo that Director Dunsmore had that shows, you know, the columns on both sides. Obviously, that, you know, would be smaller footings and everything, but it's just kind of, anytime you cantilever anything like that, it just, there's a, always a lot more foundation. I'm not sure if that's what you're asking.
Well, it kind of is. I mean,
And I think part of, just if I may add to it, the reason we looked at the cantilever idea was more usable ground space, not just the conflict with utilities, but having the flexibility to drive through this space with an emergency vehicle or with maintenance or with setting up events. If you have two rows of columns, two rows of trees, you start to get pretty tight on what you can do there. So flexibility of use and shade, how to get the balance just right, is where this design derived from.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And then the last thing, I'm not going to get into detail about trees, but in this particular drawing you have up on the screen, you're showing a couple of trees that, you know, exceed 35 feet in height. And I thought one of your earlier premises was to avoid blocking the view too much from the freeway, but it just, I thought on your more detailed drawings, these trees would be shorter than that.
I think the trees are showing a little bit out of scale. I think this is more of a 20 or 30 year grow out of those trees at best, especially in a plaza kind of setting where you've got a lot of concrete coverage. They're probably not ever going to get to that height. So I think they're a little bit overdrawn, especially the ones at the rear that are sort of the phantom ones showing light in the background. And again, I think you bring up a good topic, but the freeway visibility, that is, in the center line of this area, that 50-foot space between those trees is really where your line of sight is. You don't have a huge line of sight area anyway. So the idea, and that's why these trees are spaced so far apart, is to preserve that line of sight, even if they get taller. You're not really you're not really modifying that a whole lot.
And since it will take a while for trees to grow and provide shade, and I'm thinking of a hot summer day where we're trying to have an event out here. If you didn't have the pergola and you had the more open space, would there be any way to, you know, with shade structures or whatever to provide some shade while the trees, you know, for the several years that it would take for the trees to grow up and provide shade?
There's certainly options. We looked at options like shade cloth and shade sails and different things, but none of them seem to have the quality and sort of the look we're going for that traditional high-quality downtown look. And so it's kind of a challenge. So I'm sure there's probably other options out there, and I think we're willing to, you know, to hear from the community and from yourselves tonight as maybe which way to go with that.
And may I just add, from a park standpoint, maintenance of those shade sails gets very, very expensive. With our hot summers here, no matter what kind of quality we get, they don't tend to last very long, and they are extremely expensive. I think what you're talking about would involve just your regular pop-ups, lots of pop-ups to start, or renting of a larger tent, unfortunately, until we had some shade there.
Thank you.
I had seen your light and then it went away. I don't have any questions of staff. I just had comments about what my favorite scenario was.
All right. Well, we'll get to that. Any other questions of staff before we go to the public? Council.
Yes, I'll come back to a couple of practical questions that aren't strictly speaking governing the choice here, but is there a way to use, with all the materials underground and we're looking to put a lot of paving over it, is there a way to section that or design the physical flooring of the plaza such that if you have to get into the gas line or the water line that we can do so without having to jackhammer the whole thing up?
Absolutely. You can use a really heavily scored concrete so that you could actually cut on those score lines and replace sections at a time. And that's sort of how the design is laid out. In addition to that, if you used a really kind of color to that concrete so you had a little bit more of a variation in that color rather than a monotone color, then that new concrete is going to really blend in really well, even if you just cut the sections. In other words, if you had it all gray monotone, for example, even if you cut the sections, a replacement section is really going to stand out. But if you do a variety in a color, which is pretty simple to do in a concrete mix, you can replace sections along those score lines, have it blend right in.
Good. I would go with that. Recommend it. Celebrating Atascadero's diversity with a range of colors in that concrete. Also, is there a way to incorporate some permeable paving in that or some capacity that to just not have a big groundwater flow off of that? Have we considered those options?
Absolutely, certainly. It's a big area to be able to look at that. We're actually looking at some permeable paver options to use around the tree areas.
Okay.
And to use in some of the other landscape areas. And then adding landscape at the sides of this, too, is really going to help to add, you know, that area where water can drain into. So certainly an option we're going to look at doing.
Okay, thank you.
As I look at the two options, it seems originally when we had been talking about it, it seemed like there was going to be a difference in trees between the two options, but now somehow it looks like everything's the same except for the pergola. Am I seeing that correctly, or is there some nuanced difference that I'm not picking up on?
You are seeing that correctly. Okay. And I think as we were developing concepts in the earlier version, we talked about having a row of really small trees, sort of the crepe myrtle variety of trees and the pergola. But we came to the conclusion that the way the trees are spaced now, this makes the best sense for the space, and that the smaller trees might not be well suited given the scale of the building and the scale of everything else in this particular location. So I think what we did is we went to a medium-sized tree with the idea that it's going to get some shade, it's going to have some the correct scale, but not really block the line of sight and visibility, at least for the first 20, 25 years.
So of the Arbutus marina and the crepe myrtle, do either of those, are those considered the medium size that would get to that? No, so that's...
Those are considered very small trees. So crepe myrtle is really... I'll really call it a large shrub. They're a beautiful tree. They can attain a height of 12 to 15 feet at extreme age. And the ones in our median out front of Carlton are doing fantastic. And now the strawberry tree can get a little bigger. It takes a lot longer to grow. It's actually kind of a variety of madrone tree. It's got a beautiful orange trunk.
I have one in my yard. I know how long it's taking to grow.
Yeah, it's slow. It's painfully slow. And it's a small. It fits the category of small. And so it's going to be just like an ornamental variety that is an accent, you know. Whereas we start getting into these different varieties of oak tree, they're going to stay small for the rest of our lifetimes. It's really at the 50-year mark where they get to be, especially in this environment, a big tree. But even then, they're still not in a large category. Like the giant oaks that we have along East Mall and West Mall are not going to get to that size ever. And so that, I think what this space begs for is something that does frame it, something that doesn't block everything, but something that can frame the space, be in scale with the La Plaza development itself, be in scale with what may come along in the future, and be in scale with the fact that we've got Highway 101 right through the middle of this project. That's kind of a big deal, and it's not something you want to accent from a design standpoint or illustrate when you're in the plaza. It's nice to retain maybe a little bit of viewshed from it, from our city hall. That's something historically we've had. But at the same time, from the perspective of the plaza, you kind of want to make it disappear a little bit.
So when you showed the pictures space. Of the two smaller trees or the large shrubs, those would be some accent pieces in there. Those aren't the kind of the column of trees you're talking about.
Correct. When I look at this plan and I look towards the back right along the hillside, having...
Those are the like the three
yeah,
in this
the three
picture
color,
back there.
Okay. The color at the background, so you've got the crepe myrtle with the flowering trees mm-hmm. at the background. And the idea is that in the plaza itself, you've got a medium-sized tree that would be similar to what you'd see along the street in El Camino Real, which is a medium street tree that it doesn't get giant, but it's a tree. It's not just a large shrub.
So there's really going to be then no difference between the two. So when we talk about the concrete and potential damage to the concrete with trees, one versus the other, it's all the same.
It's
all the same.
All the same, and it's all based on how you plant that tree. I think in the past, there hasn't been significant attention given to how trees are planted, when they're planted in a sidewalk, when they're planted in a street. New methods now about doing a root barrier, about doing deep watering, about preparing the soil for an actual planting before you build the concrete improvements are huge in how that tree grows and whether the roots grow down or whether they grow out and destroy your concrete. That can be accomplished through engineering and just through planting standards. And how you care for that tree. And it also will tell you how well that tree is going to do. So those things can be dialed in. That is a science. It's well known. It's a science, unfortunately, that in a lot of communities really hasn't been followed in recent years. So we're seeing trees that were planted 20 years ago now that are lifting sidewalks all over our communities. We have them in our town here. We have them in our adjacent towns. They weren't planted with any root barrier. They weren't planted with any deep watering. They weren't planted in soil that was prepared for them to grow deep into. They were planted on soil that was prepared to hold up a foundation. We call it structural soil. It's really gravel. It's really decomposed granite. And that tree is struggling, and it's spending its roots out to search for the nearest water, which typically comes from the top. But here, we're lucky we have a lot of deep groundwater. When those trees get into it, those roots are going to go down.
Okay.
And I think if it's designed right, they'll continue to do that.
And then if something did happen where it was buckling some of the concrete, you were talking about already the plan to have the, you know, portions of sidewalk or plaza where you could remove sections and
yes,
do whatever magic would have to happen and put that back together again. Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. I think we are wrapped up with our questions of staff. So why don't we go ahead and go to the public? And is there any member from the public wishing to comment? Seriously? Really?
Just enjoying the
show, I guess. Mr. Zappas, is there anything you'd like to come back and say by any chance?
Very simply, staff has dealt with a lot of input from a lot of people, and they've done an excellent job. And I just want to say, go team!
Go team. We like that. All right. So let's go ahead and bring it back for comments, and I think Councilmember Newsom had one. Oh, yes.
I apologize. I don't want to have the council have unrealistic expectations.
You mean it won't be up by fall?
It won't be up by fall.
Okay.
There are some cities that have had some success with the deep water rooting and the root barriers. That doesn't prevent the roots from coming up and cracking the cement. It certainly has seemed to reduce them in a lot of jurisdictions, but I don't want you to think, staff told us that if we planted them these ways,
right. No, that's,
we'd never have a root. So.
No, that's understandable, which is why I asked that in the event that it does happen, as the director had said, we'd have the kind of squares, almost separate pieces that could then be, corrections could be made. I don't know what you do with
Perfect.
A root that comes up, but I'm
Thank
sure
you.
We'd figure it out. or people smarter than us 20 years down the line will figure it out. Councilmember Newsom.
I think some of that growth is inevitable, that we're going to have some structure that's going to have to be changed. I'm in actually favor of concept two, and I do want us to be conscious of the costs. So I think at any point, if one concept over the other is more expensive, then perhaps we need to reevaluate it. But aesthetically, I like the pergola. So thank you.
I would kind of echo that. I mean, I'm afraid that if we go without the pergola, it's going to be too barren, especially in our hot summers as we wait for the trees to mature. But I am concerned about the cost option of the pergola, especially if it drives us into prevailing wage, which could then substantially increase the cost. This is a centerpiece of our community, and we all hope, you know, for great success for La Plaza, and we're grateful for them to put this in the overall development. And so this is a centerpiece. It's worth spending a few extra dollars to have something that everybody goes, wow, this is really neat. So.
And I apologize if it wasn't clear in the staff reports. The plan with the pergola will cost more.
I understand.
There is no doubt about that. We have been trying to get some estimates of that cost, but have not been successful yet. I would say $250. Director DeBar thinks it's about $150,000 more. I'm going to go up to $250,000 because I'm the pessimist. We do have available park impact fees to pay for the cost of the pergola. Certainly, we can bring that back to you once we get engineers' estimates to make sure that that is something you want to go for. But I am conscious of trying to move this project through as quickly as possible. I know Mr. Zappas and his team desperately would like to have this open at the same time as his building, and so we want to be able to move as quickly as he does.
Okay. So to be clear then, though, I mean, if we go pergola, we're definitely in the territory that this becomes a city project.
Yes.
And we would spend some parkland fees on it. But it also we could work on that in conjunction or concurrently with Mr. Zappas working on his
absolutely, positively,
project.
That is the plan.
So there's definitely a cost feature, but it would be a little more straightforward what the path ahead would be.
Correct.
Is that correct? Okay, thank you. Yeah, I would kind of go back. I hate to hear that it's that much more money, but again, it's centerpiece of our community. I think it is something that is worth spending some money on. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And when you think about so basically what you're saying really is that $138,000 would come to us. We're even thinking without the pergola, it's more than $138,000. So I'm really hoping council's hearing that, mm-hmm. that beyond pergola, the rest of the plaza will be more than those fees. That's our plan. Plus pergola would be more. So we want to be clear on that. And I do agree with you, Councilmember Borbo. It's also nice to think about the parkland fees. We can't simply do anything we want with parkland fees in any park. It has to be for a new park or some sort of an improvement, and so this really is a great opportunity to use those fees for something, as you said, as a sort of a centerpiece of our community. So just kind of wanted to make those clarifications. Councilmember Funk.
Yes, I would concur in the sense that this is a real centerpiece of our community, and I think the things that will make this park this plaza is something that people use and enjoy at various times of the day and evening are shade, inviting lighting, and a place to sit. And if we provide those in a way that invites people to enjoy that space, people will engage with that regularly, and it will serve us as part of the placemaking that we want to do in our downtown. As such, I mean, if you compare what the city invested in this versus what we invested in parkland fees in the Joy Playground, this is substantially smaller for something that will be a very important service within our community. I think it's a good investment to go with the pergolas and to be able to use that space now, and I think that we'll be glad we did.
So I will say I'm also a fan of the pergolas. I think we get the greenery. I spoke with Zoe earlier today, and she's big on softening the hardscape, and I think the vines, those would grow quickly and provide shade and also some of that softening. I think it is a very good investment that we'd be making. I would prefer, just for sake of moving this through, that you know we go in eyes wide open, that we know it's going to be more than this 138 that we've got. Let's say, you know, 250 and another 250. Let's say it could be a half a million offset by the 138,000. If for some reason it's 750,000, okay, yeah, maybe you bring it back to us. But I don't want to see this again unless it absolutely has to come back before us. Yeah. So I'm hoping I could have some consensus on that, get this moving. So with that, I would...
Well,
yes,
I've
Mayor Pro Tem.
Kind of question for you on that, or for staff, sure. In the sense that, you know, as you stated up front, we don't want to get in details, and I don't want to be, you know, picking out tree types. But I thought the premise was that this was to provide a big picture guidance between scenario one and two, and that it probably would come back at some point for some detail stuff. You're just suggesting let them run with it. No reason for it to come
back.
Let
them run with it. I don't think we need to be picking out tree types and things like that. I think if the applicant and staff can get together on that, I think what we've seen, you guys are on the right path. There's nothing that you've said or nothing we've brought up that you haven't already thought of. It's moving forward in a really good direction, and let's just keep this pace going. I think for us to have to look at this again just slows the project down. Is that, do I have a consensus on that, or where does
that
everybody sit with
expectation
that?
Expectation on that, or, I mean, I'm okay with that because I don't consider my
aesthetic
judgments any better than anybody else's on this. So.
That would work well. If there are specific things that you have concerns about, if you're saying, hey, while we get Director Dunsmore and Director DeBar to agree on these trees, that this is a consideration, please... say that now. It doesn't have to be part of a formal motion, but certainly some of those directions would be good so that we know exactly where you'd like to go.
So that is a good opportunity then. Is there anything, I know Councilmember Funk, you kind of gave some of your input and what you're interested in seeing. Councilmember Newsom, is there something that you wanted to add here?
When I addressed being conscious of the costs, I'm mostly worried about impacting Zappa's project going forward. So again, I'm of the consensus that I don't think that you need our buy-in anymore on this project. You guys have done an excellent job. So I'm in support of it all the way through.
And is there any other direction that you wanted to give in terms of trees or lighting or anything?
No, we can make individual comments on that on the side, I guess. It's not, yeah. We don't need to bring that
excellent
stuff back to the council.
So do we have a motion?
I make a motion that we accept this and proceed as staff has recommended with concept number two.
I second the motion.
We have a first by Councilmember Newsom, a second by Councilmember Funk. Roll call, please.
So I just want to make sure so that I capture this right, because it was really just provide direction to staff. So I just want to capture what you want your motion to be, that you want design number two?
Correct.
All right, perfect. Okay. Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Burbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Excellent. Thank you. All right, we are now on to number two under our management reports, and that is a second amendment to solid waste collection franchise agreement. And this will be our Deputy City Manager, City Clerk, Laura Christensen.
Thank you, Mayor. Really quick, I want to give everyone these. And I'll get to that in a second. That's an updated rate sheet, which we'll get to. So today we're going to talk about the second amendment to the Solid Waste Collection Franchise Agreement. Last month, we talked about the state of recycling and kind of where the market is and what's been going on with not just the resale market for the recycling products, but also what's happening in the city with contamination. And because of the resale market and the contamination, council approved an amendment to the North Slo County Recycling Agreement to increase the tipping fees that they receive from the recycling materials that are tipped, that are actually collected by Atascadero Waste Alternatives and tipped at their processing facility. And we talked about the reason that they needed the increased tipping fees, which were because of the recycling market and because of contamination. And we talked about how contamination, the contract had really called for 10% contamination, but trending was about 25% for residential commingled recyclables. What they were seeing is about a 25% contamination rate, and that the causes for those that contamination is wishful recycling, willful contamination, and then changes in the recycling market. And as part of that process and the process that we've really been going through for over a year, the city and Atascadero Waste Alternatives have really talked about how to address contamination prior to getting that request from North Slo County Recycling. And so, you know, like we had talked about a month ago, the increased contamination rates are not unique to Atascadero, but there really are ways that we can help to address that and then continue to meet our diversion rates while at the same time hopefully control those costs that we've already seen increase and hopefully to keep them flat over the next 2 years of that contract with North Slo County Recycling. And so we really talked and have spent the last year with the Atascadero Waste Alternatives really talking about how we can reduce the likelihood of contamination and how we can eliminate incentives that increase contamination. And as a result for that, we one of the things that we did was to amend the contamination rate. So when we were dealing with that amendment with North Slo County Recycling, we negotiated raising the contamination rates for residential from that 10% to the 25% for residential loads. So now we're kind of more along the lines of what we were seeing on a regular basis and kind of with the trend of where the market is and what recyclers are seeing with residential contamination. Another way to really, and the purpose of this amendment that we're bringing forward, is really to curtail the willful contamination. And here's just an example for you of things that the Atascadero Waste Alternative drivers see sometimes when they go to pick up bins. And, you know, when they see something that's very obvious like this, they don't pick it up. These are the ones that they will leave the bin, and then dispatch will contact the resident and let them know that this needs to be cleaned up and that they won't pick it up. And so what really the problem is that most of the time the lid is on, and drivers, as we talked about last month too, the drivers don't know that there is that level of contamination until the bin is actually being dumped into the truck, and then there are cameras on the truck, and from the cameras they can see the stuff that's going in. But at that point it's too late. Once it's in the truck, it's in the truck, and then it needs to go to the recycler and then be dealt with there, and then that in turn increase the cost of processing the recyclables, not just because it's contamination, but because it messes with the machines. You know, something like that, when you have a machine that deals with teeth to process everything that gets stuck in the teeth, it causes the machines to break. Then you have to have extra staff go in to pull that stuff apart. You know, not only do you have a very, very large foam mattress topper, perhaps, but you have plastic bags. And, you know, we don't know what's in that plastic bag, don't know if it's trash or recyclables. And then that, obviously, a lot of times, especially when it is trash mixed with recyclables, that trash then contaminates all of those recyclables, and then everything that was at some point recyclable now is no longer recyclable because it's contaminated. A lot of times that happens, what they see a lot is with diapers, right? So you get some grimy diapers in there, and then it contaminates all the recyclables, and someone has to go through and pick that out. And that then in turn is a cost, which then turns around and comes back onto the customer. So really the point of bringing this amendment forward is really to curtail that willful contamination and really stop the incentives for, you know, having a really small trash can and then throwing everything into your recyclable container, because that's a one size recycled container for everybody and has plenty of room where the trash cans don't. And so, like I'm saying, we really want to disincentivize that contamination. And we, you know, we did a little bit when we did the contract amendment and adjusted the costs to, you know, get more in line so that there's not such a huge gap between a 32-gallon and a 60-gallon. But even then, that gap is still relatively large. So working with Atascadero Waste Alternatives, they asked about a fee for overfilling containers. Is that's a lot what they see happen with commercial, is that a lot of it then winds up going, instead of from recyclable, into trash containers, and then those are overfilled as well. And again, we talked about the diversion rate, so then that also then cuts into our diversion rate and meeting those requirements by the state. And then we also talked about a contamination fee. So that way, not only can they curtail a lot of that overfilling and the process that they have to go through to be able to collect the trash and get to the trash when those enclosures are full of trash and they have to maneuver everything out of the way to get in and get that, but then it'll also deal with that extreme and excessive contamination that we're seeing, not only that they see with commercial, but that is occurring on the regular with residential. If this is approved, the proposed fees will go into effect May 1st, give us enough time to start getting some education out there, letting people know that there are these fees going into place. Again, these fees are not fees on top of what you're already paying. These are fees if you are found to be in contamination or overfilling. The amendment, the way that it's set up and the language of the amendment, Atascadero Waste Alternatives, they'll document every instance of overfilling and contamination. So they'll make note of it and they'll take pictures of that so that a customer can be noticed. And when a customer challenges it, there's obvious evidence of why that fee is being put into place or why they're being noticed, that in future they will be fined. Well, they will receive that fee. And then every instance of overfilling and excessive contamination will be charged. And again, excessive contamination are a lot like what I showed you in that picture. It's not that wishful where people think that they're recycling the right stuff. It's where they're putting in the 10 bags of trash and, you know, the foam mattress toppers and the dirty diapers and, you know, where it's very obvious that they're willfully contaminating their recycle bins versus those who, you know, don't realize they see the recycle on the bottom and think that that means that it's recyclable, where 1 through 7 is not, it's only 1 and 2. So it's not those that are requiring the education that will get out there. It's really those who are purposefully contaminating as a means to cover the difference in their trash. After receiving warnings and education, repeated contamination then will be charged that contamination fee. So that will have to be on a number of occasions versus a first time. And then contamination fee notices and contamination warning notices will be placed on the contaminated bins. So at those times, you know, and like I said, in the residential, unless it's very obvious when they go to pick up, they don't notice it till it goes through. So once it already goes through, they'll get pictures of what they can, document what they can, and then they will put a notice on the bin so that the customer knows right away that there was contamination. And then I think I have it on this next one. Yeah. So the notice will tell them what can and can't be recycled. So, you know, a foam mattress cover can't be recycled. Trash bags can't be recycled. You know, let's say it was an entire box of used, I don't know, food materials that aren't recyclable. You know, it would explain to them what was in there and why that's not recyclable. And then it'll also have a notice on there that subsequent incidences will receive a fee, and that the continuation of the contamination after either receiving a fee already for being excessive or continued notice could result in being issued a larger size garbage container or having additional collection frequency, depending on what the drivers and those at Atascadero Waste Alternatives think would be the best option for dealing with that customer. And there will always be a phone number so that they have someone to speak with at Atascadero Waste Alternatives regarding the notices that they've received. And then, like I said, we do also want to combat the wishful contamination so that everyone learns what is and is not recyclable, what the recycling market is now. I mean, some questions have come up, but I still don't think, just the other day I was at dinner and someone was asking about this and why their trash rates had gone up. And I think I had a 30-minute conversation explaining the recyclable market, where we're at now, why their trash rates went up, what that has to do, why they can't opt out of recycling, and how recycling is part of our solid waste program. You know, so just really doing a lot of that education. So the Atascadero Waste Alternatives, the Integrated Waste Management Authority, and the city are all working together to really work on that education and the best way to really get this information out, especially in a market that's continually changing. So you'll see increased public education on what is recyclable. IWMA has created some new stickers that they're going to be putting on trash bins that is a better update to what is and isn't recyclable and what can go in, what goes in the trash bin versus what goes in your blue and green bins. Information will be on all of our websites, and there'll be handouts at our counter, at Atascadero Waste Alternatives counter, and obviously through Integrated Waste Management Authority. Integrated Waste Management Authority also does education classes at schools, so we'll be working with them to kind of increase some of that education. And then obviously customer services representatives will be available to answer questions at all three agencies. And then I just want to point out section 5.4.6 in the contract. At the bottom, it had said that contractor will inspect the customer's premises. Obviously, neither the city nor Atascadero Waste Alternatives has the authority to go on someone's property. So really what that meant was the containers themselves, or for commercial, the enclosures where the containers are kept. So we updated that, so that's very clear. And then I did also want to point out that the rate sheet is updated. So on the rate sheet, the contamination fees, obviously, and the overage fees are new. But there was an error on the rate sheet when we approved it in February, and we used old rates. And so other than those additional charges you see, other than the contamination fees and the overage fees, these are the existing fees that are already in place in accordance with our contract, not the ones that we had approved in February or that are part of the packet. These are actually the fees that are in place. And then the contamination fees as listed and the overage fees are the new ones. So I just wanted to make sure, since that's part of the contract, that we know that this exhibit and the one that I handed out, and it's also in the public review book, is the actual rates, the additional charges. And then the fiscal impact. So we do receive a 10% franchise fee from Atascadero Waste Alternatives for costs associated with administering the contract. And the collection of any fees obviously means that there will be an increase of those franchise fees paid to the city. And then 40% of any contamination fee that's collected will go to the city to help offset some of that recycling education that the city's going to help to take on to really get this information out there and really make sure that our residents understand what is new with recycling and, you know, making ourselves more available to have those conversations and really get that information out. And so the recommendation is to approve Amendment Number 2 to Agreement Number 2014-015 with the Tascadero Waste Alternatives to allow for the collection of fees for the contamination of recyclable material containers as well as the overfilling of trash containers. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Laura. And so this rate sheet that you handed out is the update with the basically the CPI increases for the additional charges, but that's the additional charges are the only things that have changed from what we approved in February.
Right. All of the other rates are what were approved in February. Everything okay. above where it says additional charges has not changed since what you saw in February.
Great. Thank you. All right. And with that, we will go to council member questions. Council member Funk.
Yes, Laura. Could you go back to your first sheet, I think? Keep on going, go forward there. I'm looking for the one where you where it included every instance changed, and every instance of contamination will be charged a fee, and also says that after a warning and education, members will be charged a fee. And I don't continue on here. There. Okay, so in the second bullet, it indicates that every instance will be charged a fee, and then the third bullet indicates that after warnings, repeat contamination will be charged a fee. Could you clarify whether or not that there is a warning that customers who have a contamination and get a warning before they are charged a fee?
So I think this really comes down to also, again, the difference between the willful and the wishful. So those with the willful contamination, those who have very obviously used, so that's the difference between excessive contamination and then just continued contamination. So those who are using their recycle bin as a trash can will receive a will receive the fee versus those who, you know, it's obvious are doing more wishful. They're the ones who would need to be repeatedly contaminating, mm-hmm. getting the notices, hey, we noticed that this is contamination. Then they do it again. Hey, we noticed that this is contaminated. They do it again. Hey, we noticed. Then old after subsequent times of receiving those warnings, then they'll be feed. They'll be receive the fee versus those who are literally just using it as a trash can.
Mm-hmm. And is it possible in this thing, this in the course of this amendment, to require them to actually put on their website an easy to find and shareable list of what can be recycled? I tried to do that so I could put it up on my Facebook page and share it with everybody, and you know, 6 or 8 clicks later, I finally found that they have a poster, but you have to, they have copyright restrictions on their list of what can be recycled so that you can't share it. I would be more comfortable with this if they made it easier to know what it is actually that can be recycled.
Sure. We have actually been talking with them, and we are going to work with them as well as IWMA to make sure we all have the same information all on our collective websites. So that is something that will be happening here in the next couple of days so that we are all in, and it will be something that's easily accessible on all of our websites.
Okay. And what is the timing? If the proposed start for this amendment is on May 1st for fines to be charged, will there be any user-specific education before this goes into effect? So that if they, as the, you know, there's the trucks are going through and they notice somebody who, okay, next week that's going to be a fine, are they going to slap a notice on it to help educate those residents in advance?
Yeah, they've already been doing that. They've already been, like the picture that I showed you is someone whose trash they did not pick up, and they contacted that person and said, this is, you know, obvious contamination. We can't pick this up. You'll need to clean out your bin, and we'll come back for your trash. We'll come back for your recycle bin next week. So they have already been doing that. Where they notice that or see it come through, they've already been in the process of contacting those who are doing that excessive and willful contamination.
Councilmember Newsom.
I'm kind of the same mindset of Councilmember Funk, is that the public awareness, I think, is a huge component that's lacking, whether or not these people are doing it wrongfully or unknowingly. I think that the information that went out from the news from the city, the recycling news, wasn't really descriptive as to what the exact items. I think I might be guilty and not even know it on some of my recycling with pizza boxes. So I'm kind of concerned that we should be doing a little bit more public awareness before we start assessing fees. I look at the May 1st date and feel like it's not enough time to make sure that all of those stickers are placed on the trash bins detailing what can and cannot go into the blue and green. I think a lot of people like a visual aid, and I think that would be helpful. What is the timing of getting those stickers placed on the bins?
Mm-hmm. That we're working with IWMA. They're actually the ones who printed those, so that's not something that either the city or Waste Management controls. IWMA is actually the one who printed those, and so we're working with them to hopefully get them to lock down a time that they're actually going to start putting those on. They have to do that countywide. So we're working with them to get something done so that those actually wind up on our trash cans. In the meantime, that's why we've been doing more education on the city end for it.
Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Borbo.
Thank you. And I do, it appears to me that we have a couple of reps from Atascadero Waste Alternatives in the audience that we might want to have them speak and ask them questions as well. I want to follow on what Councilmember Funk asked about. To be clear, to her question here, people are going to get a warning first, or if they're obvious, you know, like the mattress cover you showed there, or mattress pad or whatever, are they going to get, they're going to get a no pickup and a fee immediately in that kind of instance, or are they going to get a warning first?
So the way we have it set up is for excessive contamination, once this goes into effect, they will start receiving a fee versus those who are doing the wishful contamination will receive more of the education, or those who, you know, might have a trash bag in there. Obviously, one trash bag's not going to be considered excessive contamination. But really, the problem is, and what's raising our rates are those who are using their recycle bins as trash cans. And so it really is the point to try to curtail that excessive contamination, not so much punish those who are wishfully recycling, because that's a lot of us who think that, you know, everything that we're seeing is recyclable and, you know, doing what we're supposed to do to really help the environment. It's those who really are using that as a trash can because they don't want to pay the right additional money to have a larger trash can.
Understand. I think we're going to, you specifically probably, are going to get more complaints about this than you did about rate increases in terms of how this is enforced. So my question is, for people, you mentioned it, but for people who don't know, you know, as the trash can comes up and is dumped in the truck, there's a camera up there, and the driver has a couple of seconds to see the trash falling in a truck and go, ooh, that didn't look good. And so now, at some point, customer could get a $50 charge, which is quite substantial. It's almost, $100. For some people, as much as they're paying for 2 months of trash service. They're going to get I want to call it a ticket, I guess, on their bill, and they're going to go, wait, what? You know, what's this about? Because it was from, you know, perhaps 3 weeks ago. I'm assuming it's just going to show up on the bi-monthly bill and not be a separate item. Is that correct?
So it will show up on their bill, but they will get a notice on their bin
immediately.
So as it goes in, if the driver is going to report that as excessive contamination, when they go to pull their bins back in that day, that fee notice will be on their bin already. So they will know immediately.
Okay, great. Thank you. And is that, and this might be a question for the reps here, but is that going to be detailed enough that it's just going to say excessive contamination and like Councilmember Newsom, I'm not real familiar, I don't understand, or is it going to say diapers or something? You know, it's going to say something fairly clear so I know what my sin was?
I think it, in some respects they can put on there what they saw. Some of it will have to wait, obviously, till it makes its way to the recycler, because they won't know for sure what everything was until it makes its way there. So I think that's where a lot of this partnership is going to have to come in. So they will know that what they can see, obviously, like if it was a big foam mattress, you know, excessive contamination, foam mattress, these things are not recyclable, these things are, you know, if you do this again, this is what could happen to you. If you have additional questions, contact us at this number.
But I mean, by the time it reaches the recycler, it's going to have lost its identity as to what house it came from. My concern is that, so, you know, some customers are going to go, you know, wow, this is a big deal. They're going to call, complain, no, I didn't. And you're going to have the photograph of that second when the stuff fell into the truck, which is essentially the proof, if you will, that yes, you did. And I wonder, you know, who's going to be handling those complaints, especially if the customers call the Atascadero Waste Alternatives and they don't like the answer they get there? Are they going to be coming to you and saying, hey, city, this is your fault, you enacted this? I mean, I think conceptually this is a very necessary road that we go down, but I'm a little concerned about the, you know, how it plays out for you. Because one of my questions was how we justify 40%, but I can see if you're handling those kind of complaints, I can see you justifying getting 40% of the penalties charged here. But how do you see that playing out as far as either the hauler or yourself responding to no, I didn't do it complaints?
So, again, it's the excessive contamination and it's the willful. And, you know, understand that these are the drivers who've been driving these routes for years and years and years and years and years. So not only are they well familiar with what, you know, is and isn't coming in, they're well familiar with those customers. So, I mean, they're not going to find someone, you know, there's a good relationship that a lot of these drivers have built with their customers. So they're just not going to start finding customer or, you know, implementing these fees because they're really going to implement these fees because someone really is, they're very willfully, very excessively contaminating. So, yeah, I think, you know, the person who did this contamination called and complained and said, you know, well, why? Because there was a little piece of foam hanging out. I mean, and you can see the picture. That's obviously not a little piece of foam. So I'm very comfortable knowing how these drivers operate and what these drivers do on a daily basis to know that if they've put a sign on there and if they've charged a fee, it really is because it's a big deal what went into the bin and that they are comfortable defending that, and I would be comfortable defending that as well.
Okay.
So I'm prepared to get those questions and feel like this is something we talked a lot about with Atascadero Waste Alternatives as well as with North Slo County Recycling, and I really do think that this is something that is important and really will address people who are just using it as an additional trash can.
I understand. In terms of, and the staff report talks about the city collecting 40% of the contamination fees or receiving that, and but it says for costs associated with promotion of recycling awareness. I see your cost is actually going to be more of handling potential complaints. But in terms of that, the city's role in recycling education, those stickers that we're talking about that IWMA has generated, they're going to be, I would understand, placed on the containers by Atascadero Waste Alternatives and their drivers. Correct?
I actually believe it's supposed to be placed on the containers by IWMA.
So they're going to come to my house and stick a sticker on my trash can on my pickup day?
I do believe, and you know, there's a fee as part of your trash that you pay, you know, on your right. trash bill that goes towards IWMA, and this is really what that fee is supposed to go okay. to, these types of programs and implementing these programs.
Great. In I'm not, because my kind of underlying question was, what is your role in recycling education, other than maybe we put something on the website, our city role? I was, because I kind of see information going out in the bills from Tascadero Waste Alternatives, and I think one of the most useful things is, I've had it for years, and I'm sure it's outdated, but you know, we got it in the bill, and it's, we stuck it inside the pantry door as to what's recyclable and what's not recyclable. And you know, some people more antiquated like me, they like hard paper, you know, so having that is very useful, and I'd hope that they're going to do something along those lines.
IWMA has handouts that we'll be working with, but a lot of it also is staying on top of that. So a lot of my role is to stay connected with Atascadero Waste Alternatives and with North Slo County Recycling to see where we're at, to continually monitor what's going on with not just the recycling market, but our own recycling program. And then, you know, working with them as they work with IWMA to make sure. And then I, in this process in the last year or so, I've dealt with IWMA a bunch. And so making sure that we're working with IWMA as well to keep that education consistent, and then to make sure that all three agencies, or all four agencies, are consistent with that. So okay. it is constantly keeping the city involved and educated as okay. well.
Because I think for the customer, it's important to get it and a list maybe once a year, because things might change over time, mm-hmm. as to, you know, do this, don't do that. Because as we've discussed, I mean, I think each of us personally is probably recognized in this discussion this time and last mm-hmm. time, how we each have committed sins of recycling. Wishful, you know, or used to be good or whatever. And then the last question, overfilling. I don't know what overfilling exactly means. Does that mean, you know, the lid is propped open an inch because the load's a teeny bit big? Or what does the overfilling mean for the context of the customer in this
case?
So
this is actually for commercial. The okay. overfilling fees, and that's when the bins, so with commercial, the driver actually has to get out and move the, out of the enclosure. A lot of times they have to get out and move the cart mm-hmm. so that it can, the machine. So it's really to address that, because when they are overfilled, or the driver either can't move the bin, or there's such a mess that the driver actually has to clean up prior to being able to then move the bin out. And so it's really to address a lot of what they're seeing with that when it comes to commercial customers.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Questions by Council Member Funk.
Sorry. So is it, would it be possible, feasible to amend this if the proposed structure so that a warning would be required first before a fine could be issued? You know, I'm having trouble with, when we're looking to change behavior and we're doing this on a short time frame when there's been a fair amount of confusion, and even if people are just being obstinate about where they throw their diapers, before we slap them with a $50 fee for behavior that last week we did not fine for, I think that I would be more comfortable if there was a notice for that customer so that you get one warning that the next one is going to cost you $50. And then the other thing would be to the other condition that I would consider would be amending it.
Actually, I don't want to get into conditions and things. Let's just be asking questions and then and open to public.
I want to find out if this is a way.
So let's hold that until the
motion.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. So let's go ahead and why don't we bring forward Waste Management, and Liz, if you have anything to say based on what you've heard from us, and then if we have any questions of you. Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and Council Members. Liz Gomez with Waste Management, Tascadero Waste Alternatives. I think the key to all this is going to be customer education. We are willing to work with the city, IWMA, to do everything that we can to let them know, hey, We need to really look at our behavior. We need to look at what the consequences are going to be for continued contamination, for continued overfilling. I mean, the warning is fair, and that part of that education is going to be, this is your warning. During this period of time, we're warning you ahead of time. You know, this is going to go into effect at a certain date, and the consequence will be, if you know you continue to do this, the fees will be implemented. But I think that it's fair, and it's something very doable that during this education and notification period, customers are aware that they are being forewarned. This is coming, and it's going to actually take place. And there's going to be, you know, as the city was mentioning, our drivers are going to look at, you know, like the blatant overfilling, the lid over and things popping out. We have in our customer service center right now what we call, what we affectionately call the wall of shame. Well, we have photos of, and we don't have who they are, but of what we've seen in Atascadero of what is not considered recyclable and that it is blatantly trash in the recycling bin. So as customers come in, and because of all of the changes that have currently happened with the increase in the invoicing, a lot of that education has been taking place. A customer service representative locally say they've had many, many, many phone calls having to explain what it is and why we've had to do it. And then also, for, you know, letting them know there would be other changes too, you know, if we continue to see this behavior. And in, some of those changes could include contamination fees and overages. So that's already been forewarned and already been discussed with some of our customers as part of the plan that we have in working with the city to make sure that, you know, we don't increase that contamination, while now the contract does say, you know, we can go up to 25%. That's the trend. But, you know, we don't know what is going to happen with the recycling market and with, you know, the trades with China and the relations. Maybe it, you know, it's going to continue to go in that direction. We're looking at it as that's the new norm. So we do have to do everything that we can to prevent and to be proactive so that, you know, we don't see increased contamination levels. And so that's why we're working together to be able to do all that we can ahead of time to address that.
And so by ahead of time, you're really saying, like, you've been doing it and continue doing it up through May 1st.
Correct. Up through May 1st. We're going to start immediately. I mean, you know, we're going to do work with, you know, press releases. We'll do social media. We'll do notices to customers. We're going to be, you know, looking at our website that we have. We have one specifically for the city of Atascadero, so that's something we really need to promote. And in that website, it'll have all of our flyers with what is considered recyclable and what is not, and what are the practices and the fees associated with those things. So we do feel that that is going to be a big piece in making sure that this is successful, so that customers have enough time to understand what is coming and what are the consequences for continued contamination.
And we did hear staff say that IWMA is the one printing the label that goes onto the trash cans and
that's
the recycling
correct.
Bins. Do you know how and when that's going to happen?
You know, I don't know when they're going to be completed. I know that that's something that they've been working on, because we're not the only city that's, you know, in this current situation.
Sure.
So I know that they are trying to do their everything to make sure that that's done. I just, in speaking to Dan Harris, our district manager, who's also on with IWMA, and we attend the meetings, what they do is they hire a group of individuals that would then come around and do all the placing of the stickers on the containers. Achievement housing or something like that would be with individuals, probably like some learning disabilities of some sort, adults that would then be able to go out into the community and actually do, you know, type of work where you'd be able to do place labels on the bins. So, you know, they do already have a plan in place as to how they're going to get those on there. It's just now making sure that they have enough, especially for Atascadero, because we're already moving forward with some of the contamination fees and why it's important for us to start right away.
And so it's very likely that's not going to be on before May 1st.
It could be. It could be on May 1st. That's what we're shooting for, and that's what we're really hoping for. There are current labels already on recycling, so that those labels should be there. You know, they want to update them and make sure that they're fresh and they're new and they're visible and everything. But, you know, there has been, I think, already recycling education in place and the different changes that are coming. And so, you know, we have already tried to, with some of our customers that continue to do the willful contamination, you know, calls to them, letting them know, you know, this material is certainly not considered recyclable. So, you know, that should not go into your recycling bin.
What sort of changes have you seen in behavior for those willful recycles, like Mr. Foam Mattress or Miss Foam Mattress? I don't know who it is.
Well, you know, it's really hard, and you know, we haven't really done a documentation of those, but I think that the education piece has been in place all along. So we're really hoping that that supports and encourages, you know, for them to stop doing that contamination. That is something that once this is in place that we can certainly start documenting and start really looking at, so we can report back to you how we've seen improvement on, you know, an incentive is always, unfortunately, something that affects your pocketbook or, you know, an expense that you have to incur.
Sure.
I know that's going to probably be a disincentive to continue that. So, you know, we have to go down that path. But it's not going to be something that, you know, those who are thinking, oh, you know, well, I used to put this carton in here before, so I know that that's, you know, now also still recyclable. I mean, you know, those types of things, it's just more education for those customers, letting them know, no, that's no longer. It's not that we're going to, you know, do all the, implement the fines immediately. You know, no, where we want to implement the fines when we really do see the willful and continued contamination.
Mayor Pro Tem Borba.
Yeah, question for you. Because we're on a bi-monthly billing cycle, and I don't know if everybody in the city is on the same bi-monthly billing cycle, if it's split. You know, May 1st is really only 5 weeks, so less than 5 weeks away.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, along the lines of what Councilmember Funk was referring to in terms of timely notification, I think it's important that I get one more bill with a big notice in it that says, you know, attention, you know, new contamination fees will be in effect on X date. And my concern is whether or not, I mean, if the council approved this tonight with a May 1st effective date, is there going to be another billing cycle where I'm going to get that notification? Or is it going to, or I'm not going to get another bill until May 15th or May 20th or something?
Right. What we're considering and what we're, something that, you know, we would like to implement is an actual separate notice. So it's not with your bill.
Okay.
And it's, you know, an important information, you know, and something that would say, you know, open immediately, you know, changes coming or whatever, but something to really grab their attention to let them know, you know, maybe, of course, prior to receiving their bill, this is coming. So it's going to be a customer notification that would be separate from the billing.
Okay. And I'm assuming that for you administratively, it's not too difficult nowadays with computers and you guys plugging in, it's not too difficult to track that, hey, this customer, you know, did X, you know, in March, and now she did this in May. And so you're able to keep track on an individual basis.
We're able to keep track.
Customers.
Yeah, we're able okay. to. I mean, you know, now we have all these new levers in place that we're going to be, you know, pulling every time we do see a contamination so that there is some sort of documentation and letting them know, you know, we did see it on this date or this date. And be able to let them know exactly what that was. You know, the material type, depending on if it was, you know, something that was sticking up and over the container, if it went through and we were not able to capture it, I mean, you know, we just want to be letting them know that, you know, we did notice contamination on such and such a date.
Gotcha.
Whatever that we can do to at least, you know, identify when it was, you know, exactly what the material was, unless it was something that, you know, we were able to just do a quick snapshot, you know, even before it went in. Most of the time, you know, capturing it on those few seconds that it falls in is going to be somewhat difficult, but we will certainly be able to, we will be mindful of that.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Ms. Gomez?
No, I don't have a question for her.
No questions
for her? I'm ready to make a motion. Anyway.
Well, we still have public comment, so hold on. Thank you very much, Ms. Gomez. Is there any member of the public wishing to speak at public comment?
Good evening, everyone. My name is Jake White. I'm the Director of Youth and Young Adult Ministries at Atascadero United Methodist Church. We're here today just curious as what protections are in place for public uses space or our church recycling. We leave our recycling and trash out on El Camino on Wednesday nights, and it gets picked up sometime on Thursday. There's been a few times where we've had members of the public just stop kind of in our front yard almost and contaminate it. It's unfortunate. We do our best to take it out, but I'm curious what protections are in the contract for that kind of scenario. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jeff Hoslin, resident business owner. So I think the big thing that needs to be addressed is education. We discussed this a month ago when the fees were raised. I think 5 weeks is unreasonable. As we know, recycling is a sore spot on what you can recycle and what you can't. Everybody on council has said what they have put into recycling, which is not recyclable. So the education is lacking on this piece still, and I don't think 5 weeks is enough time. Secondly, to echo Jake's thing, my trash goes out tomorrow morning. I put it out at night. And the public's very good of using commercial recycle bins and dumpsters. And I don't think there's that many businesses that violate the overflowing. I think it's more the public finding, oh, there's a dumpster, we have to get rid of stuff. And it goes into the wrong bin. And once again, commercially, we're responsible for the public's problem. And when it dumps into the trash can or the trash truck or the recycling truck, it's too late for us to actually call the police department and tell you the names on the trash and have them track down the individual and make them take it back. And trust me, I've done this several times, and I do tie up our police department to track them down. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
My name's Heather, and I am a wishful contaminator. I'm one of those people, as each of you are, who wants to do my very best for the environment. And so, yes, if I have shredded paper, I'm ready to put my shredded paper in there. No more pizza boxes, no more, cartons, milk cartons that have plastic on the outside or wax on the outside. I'm wondering, what about bottle caps? You know, I'm thinking about everything that I used to just automatically say, oh, good, I can recycle this. And now I'm going through kind of this existential angst around all of my recycling. It was such an education 1 month ago as to all of the things that I was thinking, oh, good, I can recycle, that I can't recycle. You know, if something's wet, that I shouldn't put it in the recycle bin. That I'm hurting. I recognize that the fees need to go up. I recognize that there's costs for recycling, the expenses, and that we care about the community, and we're thinking about how to keep everything as affordable as possible, but that there is a cost to it. But I'm also concerned about how we're in a world that we've gotten lax, that we can, you know, collect all of these products because we can just recycle them, and that we're running out of that option. And so I guess what I'm asking for is that we keep being open and looking for what are other ways of reducing the amount of trash that we have in our city, in our homes, in our city, in our environment. That's all.
Thank you. Any other members of the public wishing to speak? Seeing none, we'll close public comment and bring it back to council and staff. Regarding the wishful recycling, yes, we're all feeling that, and there is a big education that's needed, and we are promised that it's coming. It's on the cusp. We're being told by IWMA, AWA, the city here, that it is coming. So the contamination fees that would go into place are not for the wishful recyclers right now on May 1st. May 1st is Mr. or Mrs. Foam Mattress, lawn chair, hose, dirty diapers, the people who are clearly, they've been told time and again, and hey, you know, this has got to stop. Eventually, those of us that are wishful, once we learn and we're educated, if we keep doing it, then we become willful. But that will be a process. I think some very good, a very good question was brought up about the public or the commercial containers and then the public going and dumping. What sort of protection is in place for something like that?
So with commercial containers, there's also a big difference with a commercial container because that's a bin that they pull out versus the recycling cart. So a lot of times when they'll see that, the driver will already notify the commercial entity and say, hey, this is contaminated. We can't take it. It's really, and the point of this excessive contamination fee is really to address residential because we can't address it ahead of time before it making its way into the truck. So with a lot of times with commercial, they can just not pick it up and they can contact, you know, whoever it is and say, hey, we noticed this is contaminated or this is overfilled. We need you to, and they've been, they already do that. We do not have an issue. Our contamination level for commercial is low. It's been at that 10% that was already in the contract since 2014. There isn't that same level of contamination with commercial. One, because commercial is, they have more people to be paying attention. And then two, because the drivers can tell them when they pull it out, they can see inside right away and say, hey, you've got a ton of stuff in here that's not recyclable. We need you to clean it out and then we'll come back for it and make those types of arrangements. And so that's already something that AWA has been doing for years with commercial. And that's something that they'll continue to address because they can see into the cart long before the cart ever goes into the truck.
So both of the individuals, both Jake and Jeff who spoke tonight, whether it's the church or the business, we're not seeing that there, even if the public comes and dumps a little something, unless we're not seeing that they're going to get a fee, they simply wouldn't be, it wouldn't be picked up. They'd have to address the situation
Madam Mayor,
they do currently.
There are a couple of laws in place that would prohibit people from going into other people's trash cans, things like that. The council a couple of years ago did pass a law against scavenging, and so it's illegal for someone to get into somebody else's trash. There's also laws on the books for theft of services, for instance. You pay to take your trash out. If somebody else is utilizing your service and taking advantage of that, we can go after them for theft laws and things like that. We just need it reported, as Mr. Oslin said. Just give us a call. We'll put a stop to it.
Okay. Thank you.
And I also just want to encourage any business that is having a problem with that to call Waste Management. Dan and his team do a wonderful job working with businesses. They have some different service options. There are some businesses that actually lock their bins. There are some different solutions that they can work with, and they will work with you on that. So please call. While I'm talking to you, I want the council and the public to know this isn't something that Waste Management brought to the city. This is something the city asked Waste Management to do because we are seeing such a growth in our contamination rate. And we are seeing a lot more growth in that blatant contamination. Again, these aren't the wishful. These are people that are very bright too, right? We talk about people putting dirty diapers and hoses and lawn chairs and then putting all the grass clippings on top of their green waste. They know that those things are not green waste. This is not an education thing. This is a, hey, you know, I'm trying to game the system because I don't want to pay for that or go to the dump. Those are really who we're trying to target in this first round. As we work on the education that all of us need, because I think all of us are guilty of some wishful recycling, and try and learn that. And that's going to be a continuing education, because as Laura's talked about, the market is continually changing on what is recyclable and what is not. So I just wanted to make it clear, this is at our behest, not at Waste Management's behest.
And so that May 1st date that we've had, you know, council members and a member of the public say that just seems like, you know, 5 weeks away is a little close. Is there a reason we chose that May 1st date? Is there a reason we didn't say, hey, let's give it 2 months or something of that nature?
I think it's just a concern where there's a lot of talk about recycling. People understand it. People understand what's going on. I think it was just, hey, the sooner we implement this, the better we can start those really truly, hey, I know this doesn't have a chance in heck of going in this bin, but I'm going to put it in there anyway. Really trying to curb those. It can certainly start later. These guys do a wonderful job on trying to stop those willfuls, but they just haven't had the tools, and we wanted to give them tools as soon as humanly possible.
Our concern is that we're sitting here thinking, oh, people need enough time, and that's not even the people we're talking about. Okay. So the people who need time will have time. The people who are just blatantly saying, I don't care what the rules are, you know, those are the people that we're really trying to go after with this May 1st date so we can start taking care of the problem.
Okay. That is correct.
Thank you. With that, I would entertain a motion, discussion. Mayor Pro Tem Borbo.
Well, I would only say, though, that along the lines Ms. Gomez talked about providing a separate notification, not with the bill, but a separate notification that this would be happening, I would want to stipulate that that has to take place prior to the effective date of the, you know, of these contamination fees. And then I would prefer that there be at least, you know, a warning before a fine is leveled, although I understand you may already be putting, for some of those people, putting them on the dumpsters, but if somebody comes along and they're a first-time offender, it feels like that a warning would be a fair thing to do the first time out. So with those two exceptions or those two stipulations, I would be ready to move that we adopt the
amendment. Are you ready to, or are you moving?
I will move that we adopt number two with those two stipulations, that there be a separate notice provided before the effective date, and that there be a warning before the first fine is leveled.
Is that acceptable? Or do we have a second?
Am I in order to ask about an amendment to that? Would you be comfortable with amending that to also include that the sticker has to be on the bins for the explaining what can be recycled has to be on the recycling bins for at least 2 weeks before fines can be issued?
Yes, I would be open to that. I mean, I think the whole thing is there's giving people fair warning, and that includes an updated sticker and hopefully a list of what is recyclable, not recyclable.
Right. And I would second the motion with that included.
I just want to, we can't control the stickers. Yeah. So I just want to point that out. That is an IWMA thing, and so we can't control when those stickers do or don't get, nor will we necessarily know when the entire city has been fully stickered. So I just do want to point that out.
Okay, but IWMA, I assume, would inform AWA when they have done so, and that our stipulation to AWA is that they cannot impose the fees until those three criteria have been met.
I want to say again, we're talking about willful recyclers. I mean, we're talking about the people who are throwing dirty diapers and garden hoses and lawn chairs and foam mattresses who don't need a sticker to tell them that that's not recyclable. I think if we go this route, it is going to take a lot of extra time and trying to figure things out, and I don't think that's the right way to go.
I would say, though, that these are three things that essentially are going to happen other than saying there has to be a warning. The other two things are going to happen anyway. They're not complicating it. They're just saying, you're changing the effective date until after that's done, and that's up to AWA can determine when those things have happened. So I don't think it's really overly complicating it.
Well, I think the two are okay. If you're talking about the sticker, let's say it doesn't get on until July, heaven forbid, but then you're talking people can keep throwing in the hoses and the foam mattresses and doing what they're doing without any repercussions, and that's what we're going after. It's not the people who need that sticker. That's the point I'm trying to make. That sticker
is not about who we're trying to get on May 1st. The sticker is about educating for the long haul. So I would...
I follow that, you know, what you're getting at. I guess the question I would have for the AWA representatives is, Laura, if in conversations with IWMA, is there any probability that those sticker applications would be delayed?
We don't even right now have an estimate of when they're planning to put them out. So they're in the process of working to, they have a plan of how they're doing it, but they don't know when yet that's going to happen. And because they're trying to make sure it's done countywide, I don't necessarily know, and they don't yet have a way to tell us when they'll plan to do a Tascadero. So right now that's sort of, and I'm going to ask Luke, I have a copy of, Dan sent me a copy of the sticker, so I'm going to put that up so you guys can see the difference really of what we're talking about with willful versus how this, the sticker really will only address wishful. And so I'll get that going in 1 second.
And I would just like to point out, they're going to put the stickers on when the stickers, when the cans are up by the road. And so it's going to take several, multiple iterations and multiple weeks of hitting the same neighborhood to get all of the stickers on all of the cans. So I would not be surprised if it's much, much longer than July.
I would be willing to amend my motion then based on what the mayor said, you know, with the understanding, of course, with AWA that the focus in this time frame is on those blatant, you know, the foam mattress people and the folding chairs and those, you know, those kind of folks, not the folks who arguably, you know, could make an argument that, hey, I didn't know.
So we're going with your initial motion?
Correct.
Okay. Do we have a second to that?
I'll second it.
We have a first by Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau, a second by Councilmember Newsom. Roll call, please.
So I just want to make sure that that stipulation is actually direction to amend the amendment to include that, rather than it's a stipulation that you actually want us to go in and make that in the amendment.
Well, I would, yeah, it should be in the amendment that the effective date is after those first two things, that no fine would be levied until after, you know, people get a warning and get a notice, a separate notice before it could be implemented.
I just want to make sure that you're...
Yeah, so in other words, you need to add a sentence in there or a phrase to that effective date.
Okay. All right, so Councilmember Newsom.
Yes.
Councilmember Funk.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau.
Yes.
Mayor Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. All right, we are on to council announcements and committee reports. I will go from my left to my right.
With my list of committees, I don't have anything meeting until April 10th. April 10th, we'll have the design review committee. I don't have any of the reportable items other than I had a blast at Dancing with Our Stars, and Abigail wore her 80s outfit to support her fellow council members. So thank you. It was a blast, and we are a very blessed community for supporting one another and all of our nonprofits.
Yes, I attended IWMA meetings since our last council meeting, and one of the key issues discussed was whether or not the IWMA general manager should actually be somebody under the auspices of the county, under County Public Works. And all five county supervisors thought that was a good idea, and all seven representatives of the city didn't think it was such a great idea. I actually, you know, looked at it from two ways, but in any case, it was fairly clear how it would come down, and so it stays on the track that the IWMA will be soon looking to hire a general manager directly by the board. And then we have now scheduled some dates for the Finance Committee meeting. Now, Those are beginning in April and several in May, but we're heading into that season, so just make folks aware of that. So thank you.
And I've got all my meetings coming up in the next 2 weeks. I'll report back then.
And I'm in the same situation.
Any determinations by staff? I don't think so. We will adjourn back to our closed session.